a happy summer solstice to everybody in our listening audience. I'm Bill, that's Wendy, and we will be longer today than any other day of the year.
All right, I see what you did there.
This is the longest day of the year, and it makes me sad because in my head, summer, I've told you this before, summer's 90 days. It's all of June, it's all of July, and it's all of August. I know it's not like that on the calendar, but that's how it's all. I've always been programmed that way because that's kind of when school's out, right? June, July, and August.
Thank you, Alice Cooper.
You're welcome. But then we find out that after today, the days start to get shorter, and that's depressing.
It is, because Jim was just asking me why I don't garden as much this year. And I said, well, I've been so busy on the weekends, and I get home way later now than I did last summer.
Right.
So he goes, it stays light pretty long. I said, yeah, that did kind of creep up on us. But now it's all going downhill, isn't it?
Now it'll start to get shorter, just, you know, a little bit shorter every day. But still, let us enjoy it. It just started.
It's the official arrival of summer, and in the United States, summer begins at 6:34 p.m. on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the sun reaches its highest point in Earth's sky.
Mm-hmm.
Monday today also marks the longest period of daylight of the year. The days will get shorter beginning Tuesday until December 21st, the winter solstice, which is the shortest day of the year, and it's my neighbor Jack's birthday, and that's how I always remember it.
December 20th?
21st.
Yeah. Is he the shortest guy in the neighborhood?
You know, I just said that out loud, and I probably shouldn't, because he's not really, he's my height.
That's human-sized. It's not outrageous. It's not like he's 8 inches tall or
no, but he's
like
not
that.
Like, you know, 6'10 or anything. Oh, I didn't really correlate the two until just now as I spoke
sad.
It on the air. Yes.
That got sad at the end.
And sky watchers will later be treated to a rare full moon coinciding with the solstice. June's full moon has traditionally been nicknamed the honeymoon or the strawberry moon because of its large reddish amber appearance in the sky.
When it's at its honeymoon phase, that's when you can see Jackie Gleason's face the best.
I see it all the time, don't you? Don't you when you look up there?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. In a weird way, yes. Father's Day was good for, you know, Steve, we talked to Steve before the show for a little bit, and you were all excited when you asked, how was your Father's Day? And Steve, it seemed like it wasn't great.
Oh, no, it was fine.
You sure?
He was being funny. He goes, I'm not even sure they're my kids.
Yeah.
You know, he's just being funny.
Does everything that we say in the office, does it get shared?
Because, you have to say not for air.
Oh, is that it?
But it seemed.
Because I'm almost positive.
Right.
No, it was. We're just not I'm not a huge holiday guy, so we went out and had a little dinner at Mickey Finn's.
Oh.
And did some yard work with your son. That was a good Father's Day weekend.
Yeah. We rented an auger on Saturday and dug
it. Nothing screams Father's Day like renting an auger.
My son.
And you might have to explain, because there's people, myself included, I didn't know until earlier today what that referred to. I didn't know what that meant. What does that mean?
So my parents recently moved, and they had in front of their house my great Aunt Mary's hitching post. You know, that in the old days you would hitch a horse to this cast iron. It must be like 100 pounds.
And it's legit. It's from olden times, right?
Olden times, yeah, pre-car.
Yeah.
And so they gave it to me. I foolishly said I'd take it. And then we had to dig this hole, so I rented an auger, you know, a post-hole auger.
Yeah.
And
post-hole meaning it makes a hole in the ground where you could put, like, a fence post
put
or
a post.
Something.
Oh.
Bill is looking quizzed, physically.
Like, I wouldn't know if somebody said to me, you need an auger and you need one fast.
Right.
You better get one. I wouldn't know
Augers
where
Augers are us.
Is that where you go from? I didn't know that.
So, you know, this thing's over 100 pounds. And so,
wrought iron, baby.
Cast iron. So we go down about, I don't know, 2.5 feet, and, you know, I had to back the car up to the hole to tip it in, and we fill the dirt in, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, Noah, I don't think it's deep enough.
Oh,
it's like,
no.
Dad, it's fine. And he's
You're not really hitching horses to it.
I know, but you want it to stand and withstand the freeze thaw. And so he's like pushing it. It goes side to side. I'm like, Noah, look, it's given. So I said, we got to do it again. So we had to dig the thing out.
Oh, no, twice in a day?
Yeah. He wishes that he wasn't mine on that day.
Can I, if this is too personal a question, just tell me and I'll go in a different direction. But what's a fair price when renting an auger?
It was $40.
That seems fair to me.
From the Ace, Mutual Ace. And, I'm telling you, the alternative of digging a post hole.
That would have taken forever.
I wouldn't have been nearly as enjoyable.
You can't get down that deep either.
And it was so much fun. I was digging holes in my backyard just for kicks afterwards. Right. I did. I wasn't sure. I'm like, I'm not sure it goes here. Well, I got the auger. I'm going to go dig a hole in the back.
Remember, I don't know if you guys did this when you were kids, but once a summer, my friends and I would see, our plan was to see how far down we could dig. And it usually ended up being maybe a yard. But somebody always goes, if we keep going, we'll get to China.
Everybody
believes that. That would take days, weeks maybe.
Sarah Palin totally believes it.
I got to Korea once. I never made it all the way to China.
That's too far. Yeah. That's way too far. But wasn't that like an annual summer event? Is somebody just, there's a day in the middle of summer and somebody goes, you know what we should do is we should try to dig down and see if we can get to China. And everyone goes, yeah, let's do that.
You know, listening to you two talk, I kind of was mad at my 13-year-old because I left a shovel out as I was gardening, and he dug some holes in the yard, and then he was digging in the garden, and look at you two grown men doing the same thing.
That's right, we're diggers.
Steve did some extra augering, and you used to try and dig down as far as you could, so I probably should remember what it was like to be a kid once in a while.
Well, there's something about being a kid where you decide that something, sand is actually a better example. If you go to any beach anywhere, kids have decided that wherever the sand is, it needs to be moved somewhere else.
Right.
It doesn't make sense, but every kid goes, well, I know where the sand is, but wouldn't it be better if it was either closer to the water or farther away from the water?
That's
good luck
true.
With that. It's going to take you all year and you still won't make a dent.
Yeah, but I should be happy Dylan wanted to dig because usually kids don't even go outside.
Right.
They're just in front, you know, they're digging something in Minecraft or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got to remember what it's like to be a kid. I forget now that I have real responsibilities, you know.
It's the worst, isn't it? It's terrible.
It was so great being a kid.
I know.
How do we go back?
There must be a way. We'll figure out a way. Boy, there's a lot on today's show. All kinds of stuff. Stay where you are. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. Steve's Father's Day was spent primarily digging. How about over at your house? Everything was good?
Yes. My cousin David graduated, so we had a big, we attended my cousin's graduation party, and the whole family performed. We have a lot of musicians.
Like the Osmonds.
No, we have a lot of musicians in our family.
The King family singers.
Yeah,
that's
like the
what
King
it was
family.
Like. And we all kind of rotated. I did These Boots Are Made for Walking. That's my signature song. Michael did a couple of songs. David the graduate did it. His brother Ryan, his dad John. Everybody kind of participated.
Wow.
That was Saturday. Lots of fun. And always fun when they have Portillo's catered in.
I can't argue with you. That's good.
And then yesterday, Jimmy Mack had a great Father's Day, and so did Papa, Jim Sr., because Michael played at the House Blues back porch lounge, and we had dinner there while Michael played, and Michael did a little tribute to his grandfather and his father.
Oh, that's nice.
It was
a tribute,
awesome.
Like, what sort of a tribute?
Just
what
saying,
was done?
Well,
Papa Don't Preach? Did he sing that?
No.
I would have sang that.
He actually did Sloop John B., which is not technically a blues song. It is a folk song, but it says My Grandfather and Me. So he played that for Papa.
That's very nice.
And then Jim wanted to eat jambalaya while Michael was playing a song called Jambalaya, and Michael upheld his end of the deal. Jim did not get the jambalaya.
Oh,
I had
man.
Gumbo. Does it count?
Yeah, it's in the family. You're all right.
All right.
Yeah, you're covered.
So it was really fantastic, and Jim got a brand new Star Wars coffee mug, and he really brought something up before he got the mug. He didn't have any idea he was getting the mug. There's a big mug dilemma that I want to talk about later on today.
There is a mug dilemma?
A coffee mug dilemma. There's all right. a giant flaw in the mug system.
I had no idea that was going
I will
on.
Tell you
you know,
that.
I almost called in sick.
I will explain that later
Why
on.
Is the media ignoring this story?
It's not going to after today. I am breaking the mug.
You have
the story.
To.
Your Father's Day was spent with your family at a lovely place.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure why, but I have this certain love for things that are extremely retro. Sometimes it's a hotel, sometimes it's a part of town, sometimes it's a restaurant, but I like being in a place where when you walk in, you go, what decade am I in? I don't
like
know.
Like you time traveled back?
Yeah.
That is a cool feeling.
I love that. I just do. And There's in Wisconsin especially, they hold very near and dear the supper club. We have a couple of them in Illinois, but in Wisconsin, they just prevail. They're everywhere. So a couple of years ago, Terry and I, we drove from Evanston to Milwaukee, and we drove all along Sheridan Road, all along the lake.
It goes all the way?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple places where it gets a little tricky, but if you navigate properly, yeah, I mean, you have to go off-road a little bit sometimes.
Is that the North Shores Route 66?
You know, it is kind of. Green Bay Road goes almost all the way, and Sheridan goes almost all. There's a couple places where you have to backtrack a little and
to put get your back down.
Put the pontoons on the car.
Yes.
Right, you go out and
yeah.
That's there pretty cool and probably very scenic.
It's stunning, and it's amazing because even though you're not that far from here, you feel like even when you get up into like Zion and up northern Illinois and then into Wisconsin, it feels like you're in such a different time and place. So we found this place called Hobnob, which looks just like 1948. Everything about it, the signage looks like it, the staff, everything about it just says this is a long time ago. And the food is great, and the people there are really nice, and the view is spectacular because it's right on Lake Michigan. And the strangest thing, and one of my kids said this, and it's true, it's a pretty big restaurant, and most of the dining room overlooks the lake, but then there's a back dining room. And that's the busier area, but it doesn't over, like, you can't see the lake at all from there. And there's more people in there all the time than,
because you're looking at the 1940s atmosphere.
Yeah, but you get that everywhere in the restaurant. You get that at the bar. I mean, everything about it just, it looks like it's from another time. But I would,
part was it of the really charm hot of it, yesterday? That's why, maybe.
It was hot, but you're right on the lake, so you're getting a nice lake breeze, you know?
Yeah.
But it is curious. I've only been there three times to eat now, and every time that back room is much more crowded. And they also have, I don't know if you remember this, but restaurants used to do this a lot. They have like private dining rooms where there's only one table. So they have rooms where it's just a party of six in there, just sectioned off from everywhere else.
Because it's a special, you know, 100th birthday or something.
Quarantine.
It could be a quarantine situation. I didn't get into specifics. But, yeah, we went there and it's...
Yeah, we'll have the cholera room, please.
Right. Please, if you wouldn't mind. So you get
cholera room.
There's some penicillin on the salad. I don't mind that.
Nice.
It keeps you healthy.
That, yeah.
Everybody's healthy.
So were you in that private room?
No, Terry made reservations a month ago and asked for one of the tables that's right on the window. And here's another thing that's very retro. Like now, if you make reservations, our reservations were for 7:30. So good luck if your reservations are at 7:30, getting your table at 7:30. That just doesn't happen. We got there 15 minutes early, and we said we're early. And they said, well, we're reserving the table, so anytime you're ready, it's there for you.
That is going back in time.
That doesn't happen anywhere anymore.
I bet they don't even have an app.
Right. They don't. They don't. And you know what? On the menu, it says that management would appreciate it if you did not use your cell phones while dining in there.
I like that.
That's fantastic.
Where does it say that?
On the menu, on the last page, very courteous, they say, you know, we appreciate it if you would just keep your cell phones away while dining with us. And that gets a star just for that.
All right. Well, Marie has something you may be interested in. Hi, Marie.
Hi, I just wanted to tell you I live in Racine, Wisconsin. I've gone to the Hobnob my whole life. That's
fun, isn't it?
South side of Racine, Wisconsin. Yes, it is very retro.
Yeah.
And at first I didn't like it, but now I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Two things. Somebody dumped a bunch of old junk in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the paper, and then a motorcycle group came and picked it all up and got rid of it. It was a motorcycle group. And they were just great. And the second thing I wanted to say is that there's a book out you can get, and I don't know the author, but it's called Supper Clubs of Wisconsin, and it has it divided by areas all the way up to northern Wisconsin and down to the state line. So it's kind of...
We got to get you that book.
There's two of them. I have one of them, but there's two of them. And one of them was written by a writer from the Trib, I believe, but I can't remember who it is. I'll look it up. But you're right. I own one, and the other one's great, too.
Yeah.
I've never been to a supper club.
Ugh.
You get a relish tray?
Yes.
It always has a relish tray.
Yeah, that's a given. Right.
I've been to White Fence Farm. That has a relish tray.
That's very close.
That's a supper farm.
Right. Right. Yeah. Very, very close.
Thank you, Marie.
Thanks, Marie.
You're welcome.
Have a great week. I'll look it up because it's somebody we know. It's some writer in Chicago.
Well, we should have him on.
I did when I was doing the night show. I didn't have him
on. No, that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. You're right.
And I listened to you on the way to work at another radio station, but I didn't hear it, so...
Let's get him on. We'll get him on. Quick break. Steve with the news, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
This is pretty and mellow, but I don't think that's what we're going to be talking about.
Oh, no.
We're going to be talking about exciting and... uncomfortable in a good way, maybe. Batsu is coming to town. It's already happening. And we're going to find out all about it. In the studio with us is Joe Tex, the COO of Face Off Unlimited, which is a company that specializes in what, Joe?
We produce improv-based comedy shows around the country, and Batsu is our big fun hit that we're playing with right now. And we've just, like you said, just opened here in Chicago this past weekend.
Oh, just? This is fresh.
Oh, yeah. We've only done two shows.
Fresh pranks, everyone.
Yeah. Hot off the griddle. Have they tried this? I mean, obviously it's Asian in influence, but have they done this in other cities in the United States?
We opened in New York about almost 6 years ago now.
Yeah.
And we started out as just a small one night a week thing in the East Village. And now we are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. We're sold out months in advance now.
Nice.
And so we decided we needed to grow more, and we were audacious enough to think that we could come to Chicago.
Good.
And so we did.
Good.
Oh, people are going to eat it up. I know you love this stuff,
I do.
Bill.
This kind of stuff is right up my alley. Samantha Garcia, also here, the Batsu co-host.
Yes.
How did you get involved in this?
Well, I just saw an audition notice online and was just like, this sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, this is right up my alley. What? I get to smack guys in the face? You're not funny. Wha-pow. It's a dream come true. I was like, this, I got to get on this.
It does sound good when you put it that way.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. Like, if our comedy warriors are doing very well, then they win the game. And if they're not doing well, then they get Batsu'd. So it's like, just be funny all the time.
Now, for theater goers who are hearing your description of it, mm-hmm. who don't like to get hit in the face, because mm-hmm. a lot of times they don't, there's no guarantee that just by attending, it's not like Hamilton, right? It's a little bit different. You don't get hit in the face during that one.
Not yet, anyway.
Just to be clear,
we are exactly like Hamilton.
You are exactly like Hamilton.
No, you have to sign a waiver for a chance to be selected to come on stage. So if you don't want to play, you just don't sign the waiver and you're fine.
Excellent.
All right, I need some rules explained to me because this sounds very intriguing to me. By the way, BatsuChicago.com is how you can find out all this information. Mm-hmm. All right. Dinner theater, entertainment, game show. I come in, what can I expect?
Well, Batsu means punishment or penalty in Japanese. Mm-hmm. So when you come in, you know, you'll order your dinner, you can order some drinks, you know, there's no minimums, eat a drink as little as much as you'd like, but it's all immersive, you know. The room is set to make you feel like you've gone to Tokyo or something. You're eating sushi and you're drinking sake. Guys will come around from the face-off team, will sign you up, you know, whoever wants to sign up to play. And then once the show starts, there are several challenges where we have audience participation and we randomly call people up to participate. And if you sign the waiver to play, you have to be willing to take a punishment should you be on the losing team.
Yep.
What's the worst punishment, though? What's the absolute worst that could happen?
I feel like worst punishment is a relative term.
Yeah?
Not for me. No. I know. I can tell you right now.
Wait, are you trying to sell this and get people to go? That's my only question right now.
I think the worst punishment, the worst punishment for the players, the comedy warriors, is where we put these giant industrial-sized rubber bands around your stomach area.
Yeah.
And you've got to deliver an improvised joke. If it's great, you get points, everybody laughs. If it's not, Samantha will grab the rubber band and pull it back
snap
them right across horrific. The abdomen. Horrific.
It's amazing.
Does that inspire people to be funnier?
Oh, well, yeah. It definitely makes
motivator.
You have to be sure of your joke before you step out, that's for sure. We also get shot with paintball guns.
Does that hurt?
Yeah. I have welts right now from last week.
Again, who wants to go to this?
We electric shock collars we use.
You want abuse? Just come to my house. I can do it. All right, electric shock collars around your neck?
Yeah, around the neck, of course. And if you're not funny, you're going to get zapped to the floor.
Oh, yeah. Your poor Adam's apple.
Now, just so people understand, in Asia, this is commonplace.
That's
This is new in the United States, but this goes on every minute of every day in Asia, correct?
That's right. There's it's a famous genre over there. Batsu is a genre of comedy there. And Gaki no Sky is one of the most famous groups out there. They're just fantastic. They're like our heroes. They are inspiration for us. And so, yeah, you just to be clear, though, you're not going to get shot with a paintball gun. Our lawyers are very specific about what we can do to audience members.
Yeah, I bet.
But you will be punished, though, but you're not going to get your clothes ruined or anything like that, you know.
It's just mild punishment, unlike the performers.
Yeah,
right?
The professionals, we kick it up a notch, definitely.
So as you say a competition, what is the competition that the people are doing?
We have everything from games like where you have to tell a story together, four people have to tell a story, and if you hesitate or mess up a word, that's when you get shot with a paintball gun. But we also have beer chugging relay races.
Beer chugging.
We have game of like a charade style game that we play. So the games can be interchanged and swapped out.
You know, the closest I think that they've done here on American television to what goes on in Japan, remember the show where you would get slimed? It was a kid's show.
Oh, on Nickelodeon?
You can't do that on television? Was that?
I think that was it.
Silent Library did a run on MTV here for about two seasons that did well. They didn't have any of the comedy as part of it. It was all just flip a card, game of chance, and then get punished.
Right.
And the idea was you couldn't laugh while your friends got punished.
Right.
Or you all got punished.
That's hard, right.
So, yeah. So basically we took what Face Off Unlimited does, which is comedy and improvisational theater, and married it, joined it with the genre of the Japanese game show.
Gotta
admit, it sounds really fun.
Oh, yeah.
Really fun. Plus, you get a great dinner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's at Kamahachi. Like the oldest sushi place in Chicago. It's been owned by generations of women. And we're just in love with this place, and we're in love with the ownership. They've been so wonderful to us, and we've been so lucky. The only reason why we were able to do the show in Chicago is because we found the perfect place to do it.
Yeah.
Kamahachi restaurant is located at 1531 North Wells. This is brand new. It's called Batsu, and we're going to find out a little bit more about it as we continue here. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Batsu is coming to town. Joe Tax is the COO of Face Off Unlimited, the production company behind Batsu. Samantha Garcia is the co-host of Batsu. It's the caustic game show that has been very, very popular way, way east, and now it's here in Chicago. I'm reading the description of the show, guys, and I understand what electric shocks are. I understand what paintballs are, but it gets to the part about the giant egg-smashing chicken, and that's where I'm confused. What exactly is that?
I feel like that's pretty straightforward.
Is that pretty straightforward?
It's exactly what it sounds like.
All right.
One of the big themes in the Japanese Batsu genre are these amazing characters that will come out and torment or punish the people, and we've kind of embraced that. So we have all different kinds of characters, and Mr. Chicken is one of them. He's a giant 6-foot chicken who comes out and smashes eggs on your heads.
Real eggs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We have Mr. Wrestler, who is a wrestler by day, exotic dancer by night. that's all I'll say about him. We have Mr. Pirate. You know, we've got a whole slew of these characters. One of the punishments you asked about, audience members, is body sushi.
Yeah.
Which is a treat, really. You can hardly call it a punishment.
This is where you eat sushi off of somebody else's
off of a model.
Naked, yeah.
Model, yes.
All right.
Not just some guy sitting next to you. Take your clothes off. I want to put some California rolls on you.
You're welcome to guest star as the body sushi model at any time.
Well, they tried that at Arby's here for a while, and it was a miserable failure. Nobody liked it.
All right. And now what about the performers? And again, viewers and people who attend this dinner theater aren't going to get hurt. You do sign waivers.
That's correct.
Pretty mild stuff.
Nobody's ever gotten hurt, knock on some kind of wood.
Hey, that's my head.
Yeah.
Ouch.
But so what about the performers? They're the ones who get punished the most, correct?
That's right. All the performers are members of Face Off Unlimited, and the New York and Chicago cast, we're going to be sending guys and gals back and forth so that both casts can integrate and get to know each other. We're all professional improvisers, and a lot of them are trained at Second City or IO or UCB in New York, and they come to us, and we put our flavor and style of comedy onto them and send them loose.
All right, and it runs Thursday and Friday nights, 8 p.m. Ticket prices start at $25.50 for general admission, plus your dinner.
That's right. Yeah. There's no minimums though. If you don't want to have dinner, you just want to have a couple drinks, that's fine.
Okay.
And for more information, you can go to Batsu. It's spelled like Batsu, B-A-T-S-U, but pronounced Batsu. It's batsuchicago.com. That's the website.
Yes.
There's also a phone number to call, 347-985-0358.
that's fine. Yeah.
Uh-oh, is that your home phone number?
No, it's somebody. It's one of my guys, though.
Oh, all right.
Well, this is on the press release.
No, that's fine. Let him have it.
Well, is there a better number people should call?
No, that's the one I want them to call.
What's his Visa number?
Yeah, the last four is 5528.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, my God.
Security code on the back, please?
Yeah, 662.
Excellent. You're very proud of this. Culturally, it's a very diverse cast, right?
Absolutely, excellent. Yeah. We have we love Japanese actors, both as host and co-host and dancers. And improvisers as well.
What about the people coming? I would think that, we have a very large Japanese community here in Chicago. They probably saw it when they lived in Japan. When they come here, it's probably a nice remembrance of home, right?
I hope so. In New York, we definitely get a large Asian community, especially the Japanese, and I hope that translates here. The word is just starting to get out. You know, the Tribune just gave us a nice rave review, which is really exciting for us, and we're hoping that they do come out, because we definitely had some Japanese at the show this weekend, and they seem to like it.
Good.
Yeah.
But, you don't have to be Japanese to enjoy it. It really sounds like something different, something unique, and something to do. Everybody's looking for something fun to do Thursday night, Friday night. Shows at 8 p.m. And again, Samantha Garcia, a Batsu co-host. Yep. Who does it with you?
Well, it depends. We have a couple of rotating hosts. Jin Kim is going to be there probably the most often going forward. He's super fun, really, really great performer. And then we've got a great... great group of
and Mio Sato has joined the team. Yeah, she's a Japanese. She's amazing. Not an actor.
Oh, really?
No. Yeah. She at the place Kamahachi. She was known to them, and they said you have to meet this girl Mio that we know.
Yeah,
and we're like, all right, whatever. You know, we hire professional actors, but we met her, and she's amazing.
She's a rock star.
And she's come on, and she has just blossomed. She's a natural. So,
excellent. Yeah. Is this one of the stranger jobs you've had, Samantha, acting-wise?
No.
It isn't. Okay. I'm afraid to ask.
When I tell my friends about this, they're like, oh, yeah, that seems like your kind of thing. Can't wait to see it. So
I'm so curious as to what you did that's stranger, but it's probably better for me that I do not know.
I can tell you off mic.
No, yeah. Don't tell me.
And as a co-host, what do? I mean, you don't ever get punished or penalized, do you?
I am usually the one administering the punishments.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm the one who usually brings out the shot collars. I'm the one who gets to hold the paintball gun.
The baby powder pimp slap.
Yes.
I think I just figured out what job she had before this.
Yeah, I think you revealed that. That's excellent. Kids are okay to see this or not?
We recommend 18 and older, 21 to participate, and of course drink.
What's the oldest you'd allow?
As long as your heart can handle it, we're okay.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
So it's Thursdays and Fridays, 8 p.m. at Kamahachi Restaurant, which is 1531 North Wells Street. You can go to batsuchicago.com to find out all about it. This has just come here. You've only done how many shows?
Two shows. Last weekend was our first two.
And it went well, crowded?
Yeah, both were sold out. And we're very blessed and excited, and we just can't believe how well it's being received by Chicago.
Excellent. That's good news. We have some tickets to give away.
Yes.
Right? How are we going to do this? You have two pairs of tickets. They're a pair. All right. So two different winners. You'll each get two tickets. How do we do it, Wendy?
Well, Joe suggested since they are this weekend, this Thursday and Friday, will be their third and fourth shows. Let's do caller three, caller four, 312-981-7200. Sound good for everyone?
That works. Yeah. That absolutely works.
Good luck with this.
This is such a novel idea, you
Konnichiwa.
Guys.
Konnichiwa. What does that even mean?
It's like, hello, hi.
All right.
And domo. Thank you so much.
Wendy just said hi to you guys. You guys have been here for 24 minutes.
No,
it's just now getting the
hi. I didn't know if it worked like aloha where it goes hello or goodbye.
Not quite.
All right.
Thank you so much.
How do you say goodbye?
Well, in Japanese,
sayonara.
When you're working and you're parting ways, you say, Oskare sama desu.
I'll do that again. That was you've never been more beautiful than that
moment,
Joe.
Thank you so much. Oskare sama desu. Now, if you're wondering how to remember that as an American, you can say Old Scotty Summer Days.
Old Scotty Summer Days.
But then blend them together real fast.
Oh, Old Scotty Summer Days.
There you go.
All right.
Try it,
Bill. Japanese, Old Scotty Summer Days.
Better, or we zap you with the collar.
No, nobody wants that. Yeah. Nobody wants that.
All right, callers 3 and 4, 312-981-7200. You're going to see Batsu, and you're going to love it, and we'll probably end up going, too, because this is really...
So.
You've sold me on it. I was a little afraid, because I don't like watching cops. I don't like to watch people in... dire situations. This is crazy.
Well, the sake will help with that.
It always does, doesn't it? Yeah. Thank you, guys. We'll announce the winners in just a little bit. Again, callers 3 and 4 at 312-981-7200. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thanks, guys. All right. Hopefully everyone had a lovely Father's Day weekend. I gave dads the whole weekend, not just Father's Day.
That was nice of you.
I think you all deserve it. All the fathers, grandfathers, uncles, stepfathers.
Keep going.
That's all I got.
That's about it. Right. That's the end.
Great grandfathers.
Yeah. Great grandfathers. There's a lot of those.
All right. Well, I was sitting on the porch over Father's Day weekend, having my cup of coffee on the porch swing with Jimmy Mack, and he said, you know, I have a problem with mugs, with coffee mugs. And I said, what is your problem? This really bothers me now that he brought this up, and I cannot stop thinking about it. It's the great mug controversy. Mm-hmm. Would you say this is fair to assume that most people are right-handed over left-handed?
Oh, by far.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not even close.
So if anyone's listening right now and you have a coffee mug and there's some kind of design on it, like I was holding my X-Files mug.
Uh-huh.
And if I hold it with my right hand, I'm seeing the X-Files logo.
Uh-huh, right.
But when you have a mug, don't you want to get your message out there to other people?
Oh,
so you
I
have
guess.
To hold it in your left hand in order for the logo to face outwards.
Right.
Because he said, you know, I'm walking the dog. I got this mug. I can't even remember which. I think it said World's Greatest Dad. I gave it to him on Father's Day.
Is he the World's Greatest Dad?
He is. Don't tell anyone.
He never said that. That's amazing.
So he goes, you know, I want to walk around walking the dog with this mug showing everybody, but I'm right-handed. So they're just seeing the back side of the mug, which is like, I got nothing.
All right. So help me with the first part, because I'd never thought this through. Whatever the message is on the mug.
Yeah, I wish I had a mug here. Is there a mug in the producer's booth?
It's primarily to show to other people. It's not internal. It's to send out a message, so you want it on the outside.
Don't you?
I'd never really thought about it. I guess so.
Listen, it all started because I wanted to take a selfie of me with my X-Files mug because I had it when X-Files was first around, and it's a giant coffee mug, and I love it. So when I was going to take a picture, I, too, was bothered by this because I had to hold it in my left hand in order for the logo to show. Now, if I know what it is. It's X-Files.
Sure,
I like X-Files.
Yeah.
I want to say it loud, say it proud. On a T-shirt, you don't have the design on the inside. You have it on the outside to say it out loud to everyone.
But who other than your immediate family is seeing you drinking out of a mug? Usually that's
people
that's
at
internal.
Work every day. I know you don't drink coffee and you don't use a mug and you should. We all should, because you should stop using the styrofoam cups that they have here.
All right.
But if you are at work, you get a mug. Wouldn't you like, who's that space guy you like?
Tom Corbett?
Yeah.
Space cadet?
We have no coffee mugs. Where's Hochberg when you need him?
It's all styrofoam now, Wendy. It's all gone to styrofoam.
But Jim is right. The majority of people are right-handers. Mm-hmm. So why do you have to hold it in your left hand for the logo to show outwards? And this is what we talk about before he gets his Father's Day gift from the boys, which happened to be a Star Wars mug.
Timely. Very timely.
It was timely, and it was like old school retro cartoons of Star Wars, and it was completely surrounded. It surrounded the whole mug.
Oh.
So there wasn't an issue.
Right.
It was like he was forecasting what he was getting for Father's Day.
But normally there's just one,
on one
message.
Side.
One. All right. Now, I know you don't like when I throw this out there because you think I'm bragging, but it's pertinent to the story. I'm ambidextrous. I can do things left-handed or right-handed.
Do you know how many times you say that?
But it matters in this story. Like, I would just pick it up left-handed or right-handed. Is somebody who's not ambidextrous, are they not able to manipulate a mug with their left hand?
Well, no, but
you
if you're right-handed and that's your dominant hand, you always reach for things with your right hand. Which hand
you
do you use a
freaks.
Fork in?
Usually
do
my right.
Do you use a fork?
Yeah, we have utensils. So normally right-handed, but I could just as easily eat left-handed. But if that was my concern that people couldn't see my X-Files logo, I would go left-handed and just drink it that way. You could do that.
Speaking as a, I think I'm going to speak on behalf of all left-handers.
Yeah, you are
a
southpaw.
Just give us this
one
thing.
You're not ambidextrous?
Well, when it comes
to
like
sports.
Very few
people are, Wendy.
My sister is too. Big deal.
You sound jealous.
Yeah, just give us this one thing. We don't have much in this world, us left. It's a right-handed world.
I know it is, but it's in order for you. I know somebody texted, get a double. The answer is double logo mugs, but sometimes.
Get a double logo mug.
That's not always easy to do. My X-Files mug does not, it's only on the one side. If I'm, the handle, if I use my left hand, you can see the message from the outside.
Can't you take a ceramics class and make your own and put a decal on there? I would do that if I loved my family.
What does that have
sounds
to
like
do
it,
about loving
sounds
your
like you
family.
Don't love your family to me. I don't know.
All right. Now, someone says that my mug is to make me happy.
Right.
Not to make other
right.
people.
Right. I agree with them. I totally agree with them. I'm not showing off. Hey, I got $4. I got a mug. I don't need to show off.
I don't care who else sees it. Someone else says, I'm right-handed, but you brought it to my attention that I always hold my coffee cup left-handed.
Yeah, isn't that, again, because I'm a freak of nature and can do things with either hand, if that bothered me, I would just go left-handed at all times with the mug. It'd be easy for me. I guess not for you.
I don't like it. I think it has to be changed. It is the great mug controversy. Vito, what do we do with this?
Hey, Wendy, I'm glad you have so much time on your hands. Well, we have some mugs at home that we're downsizing, so I'll drop them off.
Oh, that's kind.
Now, Wendy, what happens if you turn the cup upside down? What happens to the logo?
You juice
the coffee
on your
falls on your head.
Okay, if it's empty. Have you researched this, you and Jimmy, so far on the porch? And
I know we're grandpa and
you
grandma.
You sound like a Midol commercial.
I don't know. We're like the.
Did you have Country Time Lemonade?
Yeah, or Bartles and James. We were sitting on the rocking chairs. I don't know. It was just a lovely day. We were sitting there drinking coffee, and you know, I got to be honest with
That's
you. It was nice to not have anything else to worry about but the cup logos.
For the rest of the week now, is what we're going to be thinking about.
Well,
how long did you guys ponder this for? I'm curious.
Half hour.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's going on. It's a marathon.
All right, Vito, we got to go. Drop off the mug and zip it.
He's coming to your rescue. Don't get mad at him.
Well, I
he
don't
wants to help you.
He did, no, I don't know. And then someone got a mug. And again, the logo, you have to hold it in your left hand for people to see it. She got it on Etsy, and it says, I hate people and bras.
Oh, yeah, that should be yours. I've never seen a mug that's more yours than that one.
Usually I wear a bra, but not
Order
today,
it.
Bill.
Yep.
Not today. I burned it.
Yep.
Is this Lana?
Lena.
Lena, hi.
Hey. As a lefty, let me just tell you that we do things so often, we're just adaptable. So maybe at some point we'll actually take over the world. But try opening your car door with your left hand.
Not easy, is it?
I open my car door with my left hand all the time if I'm driving.
Really?
Yeah, it's the closest hand to the door.
Oh, no, but from the outside to get in.
Yeah.
I always...
Do you use your left hand
Yeah,
for that?
Because if I use my right hand, then it's going to cross in front of me. I open with my left hand and step in.
Do you drive in the UK?
No, but I'm walking up to the car, and I open the door with my left
Maybe
hand.
Maybe you're so ambidextrous, which would really ruin your life.
It would ruin your life, because you think you're so special that you're ambidextrous.
No, I know other ambidextrous people. They're very nice.
All right.
Everything is ambidextrous to some point,
right.
Unless you truly have only one hand. You are indeed ambidextrous.
That's true.
There's a great book. It's like a left-hand turn around the world or something like that. It's a short read, but you guys could have on that author at some point.
I would talk to them.
Yeah.
Have we written this down? Because I'm too busy thinking about how I get in the car.
I would think normally.
What?
Oh, go on. I'm sorry, Lena.
That's fine. For the rest of the day, why don't you just keep your right hand either like in a pocket or
I'll just keep it in my pants.
Yeah.
Good advice. Yeah. That's solid advice.
I meant my
whatever.
All right,
Lena,
what was the name of that book again, Lena?
A Left Hand Turn Around the World, something along those lines. I can't remember the author.
Did you commiserate with Kevin when you guys were talking to each other because you're both lefties?
Well, I did a little bit, but we don't dwell on it because we're adaptable and we are used to righties who just always have to have their way.
It's not a big deal to us. It's it's our life. It's just every day.
Lena, toilet paper is a problem for some reason for left-handed people too, right?
Why do you say that?
It's true.
It's not always on the same side.
It's almost always on the side to accommodate right-handed people.
It's on the left side in one bathroom. I have it on the right side in another bathroom.
Did you
bathroom.
Switch over in well, case no, ambidextrous just, people visit you?
There's a sink on the other side, so I can't put it there. It's
Well, you know, in some cultures, the left hand is used for certain things
yes.
and the right hand is used for other things. But I live in the Western world in the 21st century.
Well, Lena, thank you. We appreciate the phone call. Have a great day.
See you, bye.
Please, for once, side with me. You're going to get in your car.
Yeah.
You hit the button to open the door.
Yeah.
And you open with your left hand so you can just step right into the driver's seat. If you open with your right hand, it's backwards.
I think most people in that scenario would use their, if you're right-handed, I would think, would you, if your right hand is your dominant hand, you would use your right hand for that.
But then it's one fluid motion. You open the door with your left hand and you get in. If you open your hand, the door with your right hand, your hand's in the way.
It takes an extra second.
Maybe I am ambidextrous.
Then you can't be it if you can't say it.
I brush my teeth with both hands.
Do you? That's a step in the right direction or left direction. You're getting there. You'll be there someday.
All right. Well, the great mug controversy is bothering me, and I got to find a mug, and now I got to figure out which way I get in my car.
I'll check the surveillance video from our parking lot and see
when
what they've got.
When you leave today, just think about if you're a passenger, maybe you'd open it with your right hand, but as the driver, you open the door. It's one fluid motion then.
But I think for most people, since there's some... not necessarily heaviness, but there's some work involved. They would use their dominant hand, I would think.
Hmm.
I would imagine, but you go opposite on that one.
I don't know. This is going to be a big experiment. I'm going to be hanging out in the WGN parking lot all afternoon.
That doesn't sound weird at all. We'll take a quick break and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I started talking about how a mug has the logo, and in order for you to share it with people looking at you, you have to hold the mug in your left hand. Then Lena called in and said that, you know, try opening your car door with your left hand. Never in all of my years on radio have I had every text agree with me.
How about that?
That you open the car with your left hand to get in the car. There's one that doesn't agree. But, I mean, that's just, I don't know.
It's a natural move,
I think so. Pat, what do you think?
I got to give kudos to you, Wendy. Bill, you got to give it to her today. She's right about this.
Yeah.
In the right hand, when I go to my car, in the right hand, I've got my automatic remote, and I'm pushing the button to open it, and I grab the door handle with my left hand, slip right in.
It does seem like a more fluid motion, but Wendy and I were saying off air, I don't know if everybody does this, but I'm very conscious of the car next to me, so I use one hand to block my car door so it doesn't hit their car. So whatever hand is available, that's the hand I use to open the door and the other to block the door.
Right, but I'm just saying if it's in your driveway and you're going
then,
to get in, I only use my left hand.
Right.
Yeah, Wendy, you're right. Poor Wendy, she's always getting beat up, and I love her dearly, but, you know, you guys are great. But got to give her kudos today.
I know, one time I'm right, and look what it's about, something important in life. Thank you, Pat.
Thanks,
appreciate
Pat.
It.
Pat sounded like Lou Kanellis, by the way. But he
it
was
did,
not Lou Kanellis,
kind of.
But he sounded like Lou Kanellis.
No, because Lou Kanellis would never defend me.
I don't think he likes me.
I don't think he does.
He has told me he would not defend either
Only
of us.
Only defends himself.
Yes.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
Good. I listen to you guys all the time. I love your show. I listen to both shows every day.
Thank you.
You guys are just fantastic. Now, and finally, there's something I can back Wendy up on. You do have to open your driver's side door because the left side of the car that swings out left, you have to open it with your left hand, even if you're right-handed. Now, what I do to change, you know, so this works for me, since I'm right-handed, I just always enter my car through the passenger door and climb over the counter.
Oh, that's easy. That's much better.
Don't spill your coffee in the mug where no one can see the outer vision of it.
Completely solves the problem.
All right. Thank you,
Bill.
It
makes it easy.
All right. I'm starting to feel sorry for left-handed people now. Casey, what's the problem?
Hi. Most water fountains, whenever you go to them, the handle is on
the right-hand
side.
Yeah.
Except at racket clubs, because it's on the left-hand side, because people don't want to get their tennis glove or racquetball glove wet.
Interesting. I never thought of that.
I think Bill can check that out.
I never thought of that. And the other thing is with pens, my daughter Reese is left-handed, and a lot of times after you write, you smear the ink because your hand is going over what you've just written.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hell being a left-hander.
Oh, it's the worst.
Thank God you're ambidextrous,
Thank
Bill.
Thank God I'm ambidextrous.
Even the spiral notebooks, we need to turn them around.
You're right.
So that the spiral's on the right-hand side.
Listen, Ned Flanders was on top of everything when he had
the
his...
Leftatorium? Is that what it was called?
Leftaporium? I don't remember what it was called. But he's right.
But when Bill goes to his tennis club, just check it out. See if the handle's on the left-hand
side.
For the
water
fountains. Don't get your tennis club wet. Right.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
I'm lefty, too. Do you remember in school when you had to sit at the right-handed desks?
Impossible,
yeah,
right?
It was horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah.
And there were only, like, two left-handed scissors that poor left-handed kids, if you had more than two lefties in your class, they had to wait to cut out their projects.
Yep. Kids in my class are still waiting. It's been all these years. They're almost done.
Thank you, Casey.
You know, studies show that we're actually naturally smarter than right-handed people, but we die sooner because of the stress of,
a lot of
the
stress.
Right-handed world.
Yeah.
God, I love what people believe.
Well, you know, when I went to school, my teachers, because I could write with either hand, I could write exactly the same.
Yeah, I know, we've heard this 10 times.
But she goes, you have to choose, my second grade teacher, you have to choose. You can't pick both. That's not fair.
But and you choose right because the world is a right-handed world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually parents that have left-handed kids push their kids to write with their right hand.
Well, she said, and I quote, the left hand is the mark of the devil. That's what she said. In a Catholic school, the left hand is the mark of the devil.
Look where your left hand is right now, Bill. Come on the air. Right. Hi, Lyle.
Hi there. Just wanted to let you know that most wooden pencils and ballpoint pens with the advertisements are right-handed. Because when you hold it in your right hand, you can read the imprint in the left hand that's upside down.
The person writing can see the logo, you mean, right? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Pens and coffee mugs.
Right.
Thank you, Lyle. I appreciate that. And I think we have time for one more. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I was going to say I agree with you because when you're getting into the car, you're usually carrying stuff with your right hand, and then you want to just toss it into the passenger seat, and so you open the door with your left hand.
Honestly, you know, this August will be 30 years I've been on the air here in Chicago. I've never really been right about anything, and this is a major thing that I'm right about, that you open your car door with the left hand. Yeah. Sharon, thanks for backing me up on this. This is an exciting, momentous day for me.
You knew it was going to happen eventually.
No,
today's the
I really
day.
Didn't think it was.
You nailed it. So then a left-handed person, would they then open, I'm trying to picture this, if you're right-handed normally, you open with your left hand and get in. If you're left-handed,
no,
you would still
just,
go left. You would still go with your left.
It's
right?
just, that's how you do it. The door's on the left, it opens out,
right,
and then you slip right in. If you open with your right hand, then your arm is preventing you
from
slipping right
into the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, I always open with my left. I keep my key in my right hand, unlock the door, and open with the left.
That's easy. That seems easy.
This is a great day
Problem
for me.
Problem solved.
Great day. I still haven't figured out the mug situation, though.
One at a time.
All right.
Pace yourself. More show after the news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. I don't know how to say this other than the way I'm going to say this.
Say
We're
it.
Coming off of a Father's Day weekend, and there are fathers out there in your life. Perhaps your husband is a father. Perhaps your grandfather's still around. Perhaps your brother is a father. But some of us don't have fathers. And I read Mary Schmeek's column over the weekend. Mary Schmeek joining us right now from the Chicago Tribune. It was very touching.
Thank you, Wendy.
And you even said you got more response to this column than anything in years. And why do you think that is?
I think it's because so many of us have lost our fathers.
Yeah.
And that there is a communal experience for those of us who are fortunate enough to outlive our parents. you know, this is one of the great shared experiences.
It does bring everyone together. When your father dies, how would you finish that sentence?
Right. So, I mean, what prompted this column was the father of a colleague of mine died last week, and it sent me looking for a poem that I love. It's the best poem I have ever found about the loss, the death of a father. It's called Shifting the Sun. It's by an Armenian-American poet, and it starts off, "When your father dies, the Irish say, you lose your umbrella against bad weather. And then it goes on to talk about all the different ways that different cultures frame the loss of a father.
Mm-hmm.
When you lose your, when your father dies, say the Russians, he takes your childhood with him.
Mm.
So that phrase, when your father dies, just got into my head. You know, it's got a great cadence. And so I just started writing down what came to my mind when I hear when your father dies. Can I read a few
please
graphs yeah of it?
Yeah.
So again, this is with apologies and appreciation to Diana Derhovenesian, who wrote the poem. When your father dies, it doesn't matter that other people's fathers have died. The fathers have been dying since human time was born. What matters in the moment of his death is that he was your father, your one and only. Your loss is unique, profound, yours alone. When your father dies, people say many things to you, much of it the same thing. Sorry for your loss, condolences, may he rest in peace. You will not remember words. You will remember kindness. When your father dies, if you weren't there with him, you will carry that knowledge forever like a permanent hole in your pocket. You will get used to it, but you'll always know it's there. When your father dies, even if you were with him, you will think of all the things you meant to say, to ask, things you may have said and asked a million times, but you'll want to say them just once more. Thank you. Sorry. Why? What? When? Who exactly are you? Shall I keep going?
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
When your father dies, you will remember that time, maybe more than one, that he made you so mad. When your father dies, you will learn, you will worry about your mother, who you are likely to learn is more resilient than you gave her credit for. This assumes she's the one left behind, as mothers so often are. And when your father's gone, you'll see your mother from a different angle. You'll see more clearly how your father helped her, hurt her, made her less and more than she would have been without him. You will see more clearly her power over him. When your father dies, the small particulars of his life, the kind you barely noticed when he was alive, grow into revelations. The smell of his aftershave, the style of his boxer shorts, how neatly he arranged his loose change on his bureau before he said his prayers at night. When your father dies, even if he was grand, you realize how small he was, how human. When your father dies, you will become more intrigued by the life he built from the childhood he was given. When your father dies, you have to adjust your place in the world, in your family, your sense of who you are performing for. You wonder if you can. You can. When your father dies, you discover how others, say your brothers and sisters, saw him differently. When your father dies, you start to know him better. Oh, you think a long time later, now I get it. When your father dies, you take to noticing how much you like him. It's not all good, but it's how you keep him with you. When your father dies, you wonder what he would be like if he'd lived longer, what he would think if he could see you now. You hope he would be proud. When your father dies, you will grieve, and then, one day, you'll notice your grief has dried up. You may spend weeks with no conscious thought of the man who was once at the center of your universe. You will be relieved, and your relief may feel like betrayal. But every now and then, when the sky is a certain shade of blue, or you spot a man with a familiar build on the street, or you hear the chatter of a ball game on the radio, you will feel a knot in your chest, and to no one in particular, you'll say, Dad.
That is so touching, and there are a million people crying right now as they're in their cars listening to this. And I have to say one thing. When you talk about how you never realized your mom was so resilient, you don't realize a lot of things until you become an adult, and especially you have children of your own. That's when you realize how much your parents sacrificed
for
you.
Well, you lost your dad early, which means that your mother lost her husband very early. Yeah.
And, you know, you don't, and then you think, boy, my mom really had it tough with three kids being a single mom. And you don't realize that till you have kids of your own and you try and give them the best, but you can't always. But it really opens your eyes to things. That was so eloquent and so beautiful.
Really beautiful.
So,
really.
Bill, your dad is still alive, right?
Yeah.
One of the few in your cohort, in our cohort.
Yeah, it's so strange. Whenever we get together with friends, the stories about parents are so in the past because it's I don't know how this happened. It's weird. I mean, I understand how the life cycle plays out, but almost everybody in our circles of friends have lost their parents. My wife and Terry has said the same thing you have said, Wendy, is at some point you realize, and you're through this too, Mary, you're an orphan. I know that's strange because you're an adult, but when you go, wow, the two people responsible for me being here aren't here anymore, that's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the moment you grow up. Completely. I mean, you know, I'm always shocked by people my age who still have both parents.
Yeah.
And even though they're fully functioning adults in the world, I don't mean to minimize
right.
that. I'm also aware that on some level they are still children. You know, that they still identify as children to living people, that they have to or like to or do offer up that deference, that deference. You know, that just to be deep into middle age and still have both parents is a remarkable thing that people who have both parents don't fully grasp,
right.
I think.
Right.
All right, we have a call here. Donna wants to talk. Hi, Donna.
Hi. I was just listening. I love that poem, but it's hard when your father dies. I was 9 when my dad died, and he came back from World War II with traumatic stress disorder, and he was just a mess. He was an alcoholic, and
poor guy.
I literally have about 5 memories of my dad because I don't know where he was all the time. I mean, and all my memories are of us in bars. He would take us to the bars. And, I feel really bad for him now. I mean, I get it now.
Donna, can I ask really quick, are any of the memories happy memories or are they all sad and tragic memories?
Most of them are sad, yeah.
But you got him at a bad time. You know what I mean? Like, my dad died when I was 10. He was a childhood diabetic. I just remember him being sick a lot. That's really all I remember. There were a couple things that I remember that are good, but we didn't get him at a good time.
Right.
You know?
I just remember my dad being drunk a lot. And, I mean, he was, I don't know. I remember him being in the closets of our houses. He was scared. Like when planes would fly over.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I think a lot more men came back traumatized from World War II than our grand mythology of World War II has ever allowed us to recognize collectively.
Right.
Agreed.
Yeah, Father's Day always sucks for me. I hate it. And then I lost my husband 11 years ago, and so it's doubly hard for me.
That is difficult, right. Although something that Mary Schmeek said, it's like, you know, you are supposed to grieve and you do grieve, but one day you didn't grieve and you almost feel guilty for not grieving, but that just means that life goes on. That's a very important part of it.
That's true. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Well, sorry for everything that's happened to you, and thank you for sharing with us, Donna, and you don't have to worry about Father's Day till next year now.
Right.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Donna. Let's take a quick break. More with Mary Schmeek. And if you want to jump in on the conversation about losing a father the day after Father's Day, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder at WGN.
All right. It's Bill Leff and, sorry, Bill.
That's
you were
right.
talking to Mary Schmeek and
yeah.
I hurriedly
she
got
granted
him.
An audience with me. So it was nice. Mary just read you. Is that officially a poem? How would you classify it, Mary?
No, it's just a column.
A column.
Just, you know, it's me riffing on a phrase that I found in one of my favorite poems.
Those are your words.
Those are my
yes.
words, but
beautiful.
Based on this poem, "Shifting the Sun" by Diana de Hovhaniemi, and I think that's how you say her name.
So beautiful. A lot of people want to chime in. We're at 312-981-7200.
All right. Hi, Adrian.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just also wanted to add my thoughts and appreciation for that really
beautiful,
very, very touching salute to fathers. I read it on Sunday, of course, with tears. My husband died about 9 years ago, and my 3 children will appreciate it very much. I'm scanning it and sending it to all three of them.
Oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
I also lost my father when I was 10. He went to work one morning and never came back, had a heart attack and was gone. And so that also rang true for me. Now, as I am an adult, pondering all those questions about my father and what it would have been like had he lived. But I just wanted to say thank you very, very much. It was very touching and so appropriate.
Thank you for saying that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian. And Don wants to jump in on this too. Hey, Don, Mary Schmeek.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, love the poem. Absolutely love the poem. And what I wanted to say was that just hope for people out there who just lost their dad. My dad's been gone about 15 years. And in the last few years, it seems like Father's Day has kind of taken on a new meaning for me, and that it's a celebration of who he was and what his life was like and all the people that he touched. You know, and there are definitely those moments, like this year with the Cubs doing so well. Oh, my gosh, I think of my dad all the time because he was such a huge Cubs fan.
I've heard so many Chicagoans who've lost their fathers say that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, in the fall when the farmers go back into the fields, I think of my dad. And but the grief has changed to more joy. And so I know people, you know, that just lost their dads in the last few years. It takes a while, but like that poem said, it does change. And I just wanted to say that.
All right. And just to clarify, the poem there were a few lines of a poem you read, and then the rest of that little fatherly tribute was your own thoughts, Mary.
Yeah, everything correct? I read on the radio were my thoughts, yeah.
Thank you, Dawn, and continued loving memories of your father.
Thank you. I listen to your show every day. This is so exciting.
Oh, thank you, Dawn.
Thanks, Dawn.
You're so nice. Kind of building on something Dawn just said, there's something that I experienced with my mom that I think probably transfers to dads as well. I always, in my head, called it empty chair syndrome, where on Christmas or her birthday or Mother's Day or certain key days, even though the family is gathered together, I look and see the chair that she would have been sitting in. And the first few were impossible for me. The first few Christmases were miserable, and Mother's Days too. But then at some point, I don't know if I'm playing a trick on myself or what, but it does become more of a tribute and happy memories instead of just she should be there and she's not there anymore.
Right. I mean, you know, people grieve differently. They grieve on different schedules. So you never want to tell people, you know, what should happen. But I do think that for most people, that's what happens.
Yeah.
It takes a little while, but
whenever you lose someone you love, it really feels like there's a hole in your heart. You're feeling it right in your chest, and that hole fills up with some really happy memories, and it becomes complete again. And I think that's what happens. And everybody has their own time in which they do it, as Mary mentioned. We have time for one more call. Chris, in response to Mary Schmeek's column.
Yes, good morning. I happen to be running upstairs from doing laundry and running to let the dogs out, and I hear when you lose your father, and I stopped in my tracks and started to sob listening to it. I lost my dad 25 years ago. He was 53 at the time. I was 25, and talking about the way that your life changes and your place in the family, and seeing my mother and how resilient she was in the face of that. Mary, you just said it all. I mean, it was amazing. The one thing in reflecting on how much I'm like him, and both my parents are gone, and I'm 50-50 right down the middle, half of each. I remember as a young girl hopping in the car and saying, "Dad, can we put on the loop, Wendy?" And my dad would have Wally Phillips on, and it was, you know, it was a struggle to get him to switch it to the loop. And now, I think I was about 38, I started listening of my own volition, you know, and now it's on in my house, in my car. You guys are always with me, and maybe that's a part of him being with me as well. But when my nieces and nephews get in the car, they're always, you know, thank goodness now they have their own headsets and iPhones so they can listen to what they want.
Otherwise, you'd be listening to B96.
Oh, my goodness. Lord help me if I had to do that. So, yeah, it's listening to all the callers. And, Bill, what you were saying about the empty chair, yeah. And Wendy, it does fill up over time. And it's moments like running upstairs from the laundry when you hear something that Mary was saying, when you just kind of lose it, and you're going to do that
for the rest of your life.
But absolutely. I mean, the hole is still there. You know, what if he could see my nieces and nephews and, you know, the things, what kind of man he would be now. He was close to retirement and taken away so young. So, it's a lot. It's food for thought. I thought yesterday about him, but I think I'll think even more about him today. In light of what I heard coming up the stairs. So
thank you, Chris.
Thank you for that.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for sharing and thanks for listening.
Of course. Thank my father.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
All right. We need to take a break. Mary, great to see you. Well done.
Wonderful to see you.
You should be doing books on tape, by the way. That was such a beautiful, not just writing, but reading of it as well. Read Mary Schmeek in the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break and find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Feeling groovy, just have my Cheerios. Feeling groovy, just have my Cheerios. Groovy, that's the toasted oat taste of Cheerios. Groovy, the energy breakfast with protein and vitamin B1 to help you feel groovy all morning long. Get in the Cheerios groove.
This, of course, is when General Mills decided to market Cheerios to potheads.
Or hippies. Let's just say hippies.
All right, let's say hippies. But we know it's potheads.
Do you remember that commercial? Because I certainly do not.
I do remember it. I do remember it.
Evidently, you were groovier than I.
Well, there was a time where a lot of companies, including General Mills, were going after more of a hippie crowd. I don't know if you'll remember this, but Pez, one of the most delicious of all foods on the planet.
That is stoner food.
Pez had flower-flavored Pez.
What? With for flower power?
Yeah, with real psychedelic packaging. So even Pez, which normally you wouldn't equate with that kind of culture, they were going after a flower-flavored and psychedelics. And Cheerios, as you just heard, was trying to tell you how groovy and cool it would be to have Cheerios. Yeah.
Yeah, but the only thing that kind of would prevent me from having it is you crave that toasted oat flavor. No, right. I really don't.
Right, I know.
I like sugar on my cereal.
There's a reason we bring this up. There's something going on right now called the Cheerios Challenge, and I was just made aware of it over the weekend. I didn't know everyone on the planet knew this but me, but it exists, the Cheerio Challenge. Now, because of social media, these things pop up a couple of times a year where there's something that everyone's supposed to be doing. But I didn't know about this. Did you?
I knew about it, and it's a pretty funny story how it started just basically with a bored dad.
Yeah, that is the origin of it.
It's hysterical.
So you're in on it, Kim.
I've seen the pictures.
All right. Here's what you get for people who are not enlightened as to what exactly the Cheerios Challenge is. And Kim, since you know more about it than Wendy or myself, please jump in if we're changing anything. You take a baby, preferably your own. I guess there'd be problems if you took somebody else's baby and did this. And when your baby goes to sleep, you try to stack as many Cheerios on his or her forehead as you can possibly do without waking up the baby. Is that essentially it?
There were some, though, that the kids were awake, and we thought that they should be disqualified.
Yeah, there were some today they showed, actually, on the Today Show I was watching. You know, they've taken different riffs now. There was like a baby going ha 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 with a bunch stacked on her dad's head who was asleep, and you know, they've now stacked Fruit Loops. It's getting very they're
getting
out there now.
Diverse.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But it is the funniest thing. Jim and I were looking at these pictures, and he's like, I am so bummed this wasn't going on when I was watching the babies, because he goes, I definitely would have partaken. I think it's really mean and abusive to the child.
Well, I
would have never allowed it, because my kids were the lightest sleepers in the world. If they were taking a nap, nobody was to touch them in any way, shape, or form.
This guy, Patrick Quinn, was trapped at home. He was sitting on his couch, and he was afraid to move because his three-week-old son, Maxton, was sound asleep on his lap. And as Kim says, when a baby's sleeping, you don't want to move them.
Don't mess with that.
Well, he spotted a bowl of Cheerios near the couch that his older son had left there, because he never puts anything away.
Mm-hmm.
So this Quinn, Patrick Quinn, said, let's see if I can get one to balance on Maxton's nose. It worked. And then he goes, let me see if I can get two. And that's what began this whole thing. And he hashtagged it Cheerio Challenge. And then all the other dads and moms and everyone around the world participated.
Do we know as of now? Because in my
challenge
head,
accepted.
Are you in on this? Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what's a decent number of Cheerios that you could stack on a baby's head or nose. Well, like in my head, if you can get to 6 or 7 or 8, that's pretty impressive.
Well, there are some that are 3, 6, 9, 12, 15.
This is in one stack?
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Oh, that's pretty good.
They're cheating, though. There are some people, there's this one baby who's laying in like a pack and play sleeping, and right next to him is a giant vase filled with like probably 10 boxes of Cheerios, but that defeats the whole purpose.
Right.
You're trying to, it's like kerplunk on your baby's head.
Are people cheating and gluing them? Because you could do that fairly easily.
Okay, you Mr. Cheat in Battleship.
You're supposed to cheat in Battleship. But you could glue 30 of these together and just, although that would be hard to balance on a baby's head or
because
nose.
Because you have time for that.
Right, right.
Well, now that this is, these are people at home with their sleeping baby, Laura. So, you know, what else is there to do when the baby's sleeping on your lap and you can't move?
All right, now as to
take
whether...
a nap?
Yeah, you could take a nap. As to whether or not this is cruel...
It's cruel. All these kids have Cheerios all over their heads. They're being
made
a mockery.
And they're going to be damaged because of this.
There's that. All right, there's that. But the worst case scenario, if this thing fell on the baby's head, you wouldn't incur any damage. Cheerios weigh 1/1000th of an inch, or an inch of an ounce. So you're safe if they fall.
You don't... Oh, my God. Some dad put pancakes on a baby's head.
That's
I'm looking
wrong.
At that one.
That one's wrong.
Seriously, just let your
you don't
baby
want to put
sleep.
Pancakes on your baby's head.
You're laughing, though.
I would have done it.
And it's pretty funny. These poor little helpless creatures are sound asleep, not knowing at all what their parents are doing to them.
Right.
Exploiting them.
Now, it could be so much worse, though.
Oh, it could be way worse. Now, there was a time where if you took a picture like that of your kid... You could haunt that kid with that picture for the rest of his or her life, but now I think that stuff just rolls off a kid, doesn't it?
Michael is 17, and for his first Christmas, I took a picture of him laying on the bed naked with a Santa hat on.
Oh,
so
nice.
So you just see his butt.
Nice.
And it was framed in the house for a while, and as he got older, he's like, could you please take that down? I'm like, your butt does not look like that anymore. And then I'm thinking... Couldn't I have gotten arrested for that picture?
No.
How do you... I mean, that's a naked baby.
Well, yeah, but I think you're all right.
Come on. They had naked baby bottoms on the Coppertone commercials, remember?
Right. Jodie Foster's, I believe.
Yep.
When I was a little kid... I don't know if they still even make such a thing, but when I was a kid, they had a training seat for the bathroom when you were learning how to go to the bathroom.
It was an insert that you'd put on your toilet seat because your butt was smaller.
Right, on all counts. Now, the one I had, for reasons that have never been explained to me, no, it had a swan's head. Like, it looked like a swan.
So it's like you had an amusement park ride while you were going potty?
Yeah, it looked like I was... Yeah, like
that
I was riding a
lot
swan.
As to what you are now.
I don't know why, but why, like whoever invented that, what were they thinking to put a swan head on there? Anyway, there's a picture of me sitting on it, and again, for a reason that no one will tell me, I had a captain's hat on. I was wearing a captain's hat and riding a swan and learning how to
use
the bathroom.
You have to post that on
the station. Oh, it's ugly. It's hideous.
I hope this story lasts all day.
It's hideous. But now, the reason I tell you this is, whenever I would bring, like, when I started dating girls in high school and into college, anytime I would bring them home the first time, they would pull out that picture and they'd say, here's a picture of the guy you're dating. And then they'd hand that picture, and that seemed cruel.
They must not have liked the girl you brought home, because...
I don't think they liked me. I think they like the girls I brought home.
That's what drove you into comedy, probably.
Right. Was that exactly?
Okay, Captain Swanee. I could see, like, a horse head.
Even that's weird, but a swan head, like what?
Well, no, because you could hold on.
That's what you're supposed to do exactly, was hold on to the swan's head.
And I think it had like a pee-pee protector.
For
the boys, you know
maybe,
how they sort of... Yeah.
There was a shield.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, a shield.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was removable in case you had girls.
But can I tell you, to this day, anytime I see a swan, I throw on a captain's hat and I need to use the restroom every single time. All right, we need to take a quick break. More of life's mysteries will be solved next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We're talking about the Cheerio Challenge. And again, just to refresh everyone's memory, because this is a funny little thing. There was a dad who was sitting on his couch. His three-week-old son, Maxton, was sound asleep, and he was kind of stuck there. So Patrick Quinn saw a bowl of Cheerios his older son left there. He grabbed some, and he thought, you know, let me see if I can put one on the baby's nose.
Why wouldn't you?
And then it went on and went on and went on, and he has some advice, if I can just... There were dads who balanced upwards of 20.
It's astounding to me.
Dads who went for multiple stacks or made a Cheerios pyramid.
That's not funny.
Three pancakes on a baby's head. And according to Mr. Quinn, if you're planning to take part in the Cheerio Challenge, hashtag Cheerio Challenge, and why wouldn't you? Because really, everyone is.
Right.
Quinn has some tips for you. Steady your hands and stifle your laughter.
Oh, I stifle.
And maybe lay out your Cheerios and find the flattest ones because they stack better.
Oh, that's good advice. That is solid advice. Now, here's a text, Wendy, from 815. I read the memo wrong. I stacked three babies on a Cheerio. I'm pretty sure I could have stacked more, but I ran out of babies. How about that? They did it completely backwards. Thank you, 815.
Crazy. Cheryl, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
You know, there's something about this that bothers me. It kind of reminds me of, like, in college when you draw a mustache on a drunk person. They're defenseless.
You get the Sharpie marker out and you put... Yes, right. See, I agree.
Wait, is that supposed to stop at college?
No.
Does that still go on, honestly?
Yes.
I don't think so. Does it?
Yeah, it still goes on.
Do you still stick your hands in warm... Somebody's hand in warm water?
You still do that.
Does that really work?
Shave off their eyebrows.
What?
Yeah, you can shave off a guy's eyebrows while he's drunk sleeping.
Maybe it's a man-woman thing, because my husband thought it was hilarious. And I was like, oh, it's mean. It's kind of mean.
What did I tell you off the air, Bill? I did think it was a little mean.
It's mean, but like the difference between a drunk person is they drank and it's their fault. A baby is a baby. They're not at fault for being
a
baby.
They're defenseless.
Right.
That's worth it.
Right. And this is being done by somebody who loves them, a parent who brought them into the world and loves them. This is funny. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Love the show, guys.
Thank
Have
you.
A good one.
Thank you, Cheryl. There are, reasons what the way toddlers are just like drunk people.
Well, they walk similar to drunk people. There's that same kind of stumble, then you're okay for a step or two, then you stumble again.
Yeah, I found this article, and of course now I can't find it now, but there are ways that toddlers are just like drunk people.
While you're looking, I have to tell you this. You were questioning whether or not you took a picture of Michael when he was a baby that showed parts of his anatomy.
Just his naked butt.
That's it. And you wondered if you could get in trouble. 312 says a father recently got in trouble for posting a picture of his daughter. A picture of him bathing his baby daughter. So she obviously didn't have any clothes on. So he probably posted that on Facebook or something and got into some trouble. I don't know that. Would that get you into trouble? I would hope it
would. Well, they have like no nakedness or no nudity, I think.
Yeah.
But this was back in the day before digital cameras. So I actually had to go to Walgreens to get these developed. And there were like 15 or 30 pictures of this kid because, you know, you wanted to capture it right. And it wasn't a digital camera. So you couldn't just take a picture and look. I took like probably three rolls of film on this.
Okay, maybe two would have been okay.
Two would have been plenty.
I'm a little anal.
But a third one. Also, we played you a commercial for Cheerios from the 70s, 60s or 70s, where they were kind of appealing to what I like to call the drug culture. 224 says, what about Wheaties, spelled Weedies? That would have been the official cereal of the drug culture.
They're very popular in Colorado now.
I know.
So toddlers and drunk people, as Cheryl pointed out, I do feel it's like that.
There's some similarities.
Both have terrible coordination.
Right.
This is how you can compare a toddler to a drunk person. They often do things that are completely unexplainable.
Yeah, constantly.
Half the things they say make no sense.
True. Right.
They behave inappropriately or embarrassingly in public.
Yeah, there's that.
This is really good. A toddler and a drunk person, how are they similar? They become belligerent in an instant.
Right, for no reason at all. Yeah,
They both puke and then rally. Oh. I mean, they just they throw up and then, okay, what's
business
next?
Business as usual, right.
They relieve themselves in places they aren't supposed to. These are toddlers and drunk people.
Mm-hmm.
Both require constant supervision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
God, this is sad. They often look like a hot mess.
Right. Yeah, the hair just decides on its own what it wants to do, right?
Both a drunk person and a toddler are very loud.
Yeah, yeah.
They laugh hysterically at nothing at all, which could be said for us, too.
It has been said of us.
And finally, sometimes they just have to sleep it off.
Oh, yeah. Every one of those is pretty true.
That is very accurate.
Yeah, every one of them. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show for you. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Your story about the picture you took of Michael reminded me of another story that's in the news this weekend. See if this makes any sense to you. In China, this is the strangest form of collateral I've ever heard of. In China, what's going on is students can take pictures of themselves, selfies, without their clothes on, completely naked selfies. They then put those into an account. They get money from a bank. And what they're offering up as collateral are these photographs of themselves without any clothes on. Then, if for some reason they can't pay off the loan in time, the bank releases those pictures of them without their clothes on to family members. Does that seem strange to you? Does that seem like something that would work here in the United States?
Are you kidding me? No. If you can take your own naked photo,
yeah,
and you can touch it up with all these apps they have.
Yeah.
If you're liking how you look, I would never have any thoughts about paying back that loan. I'd say fine.
You just get the loan and say, yeah, give this to whoever you want.
Isn't that technically revenge porn?
You know, I think it's a semi-legal version of it. It is, isn't it?
Like, if you don't pay me back, I'm going to release these photos of
right.
you naked.
Right.
What if you're Cindy Crawford?
What if I was Cindy Crawford?
All right, we'll give you a little time to
I
think.
Wouldn't be here today.
I haven't played that game in years.
Okay, no, but seriously.
I'd be at home right now.
No, because she's with herself all the time, you know?
It'd be new to me.
Sometimes I think, what if I was Penelope Pitstop?
Yes.
All right, well, you have a weirder thought pattern. But anyway, so if you're Cindy Crawford and you take a selfie of yourself naked,
because right.
that's what a selfie is, a picture of yourself,
yeah.
what do you care if it goes out? Look at it, Cindy Crawford, how beautiful she is.
Except that I think one of the things they're trying to do here is China is a very honorable culture. So to them, it's such a terrible thing for people close to them to see these photographs that they're playing on an honor system, which is, I'm definitely going to pay my loan back because the last thing I want anyone who knows me is to see these photographs. You know, let me read you the story. This is out of Bloomberg. University students desperate for cash have been sending nude photos of themselves as collateral.
Like these will never get out anyway, even if you do pay back your loan.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Keep your clothes on and your pictures.
Solid advice. Sending nude photos of themselves as collateral to several online lending platforms. This according to the official People's Daily. Typically, they get loans of $2,280. Nice round figure. Why is that the number?
I don't know.
Have you ever thought, I need to borrow money. I think $2,280 should do it. Why would that be the money? It doesn't make sense. They get even more if they're doctoral students or enrolled at a famous university. So the way this is structured is, if you seem like somebody that's got a future where these pictures can harm you,
the risk isn't as high. They're willing to give you more.
You get more money.
Do you get more naked?
It doesn't say. It doesn't
like say. Top only for the $2,280.
Oh, that's interesting.
Full frontal for...
I don't know if you can negotiate with them. I wonder if you can negotiate. I will show you my elbows for $30. I wonder if that's ever been said. Or at least one loan... at least one loan had a weekly interest rate of 30%. Boy, that's
wow.
high. A weekly interest rate of 30%, not an annual interest rate, a weekly. Delinquent borrowers face the threat of their naked selfies being sent to family members if they don't pay. So
this
think about
can't
it. Those
be legal.
Closest to you.
They're holding these pictures hostage, basically.
Yeah, but the laws in other countries... I mean, some of our laws are goofy, too, but you know how every country just has their own set of ethics? So maybe what we would go, well, that's revenge porn. Maybe in China they're like, well, legal. What do you want to do? I got to talk to my friends over at Banco Popular and see what I can work with them.
Would you show the inner part of your elbow or the outer part?
The outer part.
I'm more sexy.
I'm shy. Yeah, but I'm shy. I couldn't do that.
All right, well, maybe Steve should have this on his Wintrust business lunch, because I've heard nothing like this.
What is this, the collateral?
Yeah.
I like that.
You're all for this.
Any naked pictures I'm in favor of.
Then it's okay.
Hey, can I tell you guys about a storm since you just invoked me here?
Yeah.
You know, Kim was talking, these storms have been popping up, and they will through the day. But the National Weather Service says there's a pretty big one right now that should be hitting Joliet in a few minutes, Minooka, Shorewood, Shanahan, New Lenox, that area, Elwood as well. So a thunderstorm moving to the southeast down in Kendall and Will County right now.
Well, thank you for that update, because I noticed it did turn it from a beautiful sunny day to like some big dark clouds.
That's going
to
be one of those days.
It'll alternate all day long, right?
Yeah, and I should say with this storm, they're saying there's some minor hail and wind gusts around 40 miles an hour or so.
I like the way the weather waited until Tom Skilling got back.
How about that?
The weather said, why even bother? Skilling's out of town.
No one's going to do it justice.
Right.
Does a tree fall in the forest if Tom Skilling's not there to tell you?
I don't know.
No, the answer's no.
This is my scary time of year, because as much as I love summer, this is tornado season.
Yeah.
I know tornado season is pushing the boundaries and going in November. And
sure.
You know, that thunder snow is also freaking people out.
Yeah, I love a good thunderstorm, though.
I do, too, if I'm home and ready to go in the basement.
For some reason, doesn't that lend itself? It's like it's perfect to, I mean, I know it's scary, but you go, boy, this soundtrack is beautiful. I just take a nap to this.
That's just a rainstorm. I don't like the thunderstorm because you can't
sleep. It's a little more serious.
Yeah, it wakes you up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Just be careful out there. And it was really coming down pretty hard here on Michigan Avenue, yet the sun was out. So I want to know if anybody saw a rainbow. That's the first thing I do.
Is when rainbow hunt?
Yeah, when it's sunny and raining at the same time, you don't go out and look for a rainbow?
You and Kermit.
Right.
That's true. I do every time.
You leave your house to see if there's one.
I run out in the front yard.
Wow.
I go, come on, boys.
So if it's a thunderstorm, you go to your basement. But if it's rain and sunny,
outside,
you go out in it.
Well, I go to spot the rainbow before the tornado comes.
And the boys are in on this?
Dylan usually comes out with me. Michael is playing guitar. And
Michael, you come with me. I've got a picture of you.
Come on. I'll use it as collateral.
Yeah, pay back your loans for college someday to me, or that will go out on the internet.
That's so funny.
There's got to be something that's like equivalent to, I mean, it would be embarrassing, but something here in America that you could use to bribe people to pay back their loan.
I wonder what it would be. This seems so extreme to me, and I'm shocked that they allow this anywhere in the world.
Do we know this is for real? Did you find this on The Onion?
No, it's on Bloomberg, the official
Bloomberg Onion.
Bloomberg/Onion.
Not Blooming Onion.
Oh, I missed that one, sorry.
No, it's real. I wonder how many college kids would apply for a loan. Although, again, that total is weird to me, $2,280. But more if you seem like you have a bright future ahead of you.
You know, if it was a full ride to college,
then you can kind of see it, yeah?
Although, isn't that just like working at a strip club then? Come on.
It's worse because it's the internet, so it's forever. So like any future job you might go into, when they Google you, wink, wink, they could just go, hey, this is interesting. From the bank, I found some interesting documents. That would haunt you really forever, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I don't think that's legal. Let's get our lawyers on this. Who are our lawyers?
Do we cheat them and how? All right. We need to take a very quick break. We're coming back with more shows, so stay where you are. If you want to jump in, you know how to do it, right? It's 312-981-7200. Bill Left, Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I just filled out a form in our middle school. All the kids go there for eighth grade year. So
right,
I just
to Springfield.
Yep, just sent my check in, and they're gonna do a little Springfield trip. Want to hope Abe is there.
They'll have a good time.
All right, you had talked about this thing that you found on Bloomberg that in China, is it, that you could get $2,280, mm-hmm. and the collateral was you took a nude selfie, you gave it to the bank, and if you didn't pay back your loan, they'd release the pictures.
What's to stop you from having pictures of somebody else and sending those in and saying it's you?
You probably have to go in person to get the money. It's not like you can just go, here's my naked picture, will you mail me a check?
There's no verification process, so that could be worse.
Yeah.
Wait, you don't have a mole there.
Right.
All right, well, you had mentioned something about one of our former presidents.
Yeah. This is, I don't, did you read the text about this?
I'm sorry.
There's a text that kind of explains this a little bit better.
Somebody,
if you can find it.
Yeah, somebody had texted us and said there was a naked picture of George W. Bush when he was in college.
Yeah, there's been what I guess is a rumor, but apparently some of the Ivy League schools, your top-notch schools, for a while were taking pictures of all the freshmen, men and women, without their clothes on. And I'm still unsure about the reason. They said it was for identification purposes.
Well, I found this link, and I, you know, I don't know how true it is because it's from messynessychic.com.
Well, then it's true.
But somewhere out there, there's a naked photograph of George Bush.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Diane Sawyer.
Yeah.
Meryl Streep.
All together?
No.
Separate?
Between the 1940s and the 1970s, several Ivy League colleges had a very strange requirement for all their incoming freshmen. Harvard, Yale, Wellesley, Vassar, and Brown University were among the elite American colleges that asked all the young men and women enrolled in their first year to pose nude.
Hmm. They didn't do that at Columbia College, although the pictures would have been very artistic. Extremely artistic.
This was a scandal back in 1995. A New York Times reporter and Yale graduate, Ron Rosenbaum, broke this story. He wrote, one fall afternoon in the mid-60s, shortly after I arrived in New Haven to begin my freshman year at Yale, I was summoned to that sooty Gothic shrine to muscular virtue known as Payne Whitney Gym. I reported to a windowless room on an upper floor where men dressed in crisp white garments instructed me to remove all my clothes.
Mm.
Right then, I would have dropped out of college.
He didn't know this was coming.
Uh-uh.
This just they invited him somewhere and
yes.
Then all this.
This is according to Ron Rosenbaum, who wrote this in the New York Times back in 1995.
Yeah.
They instructed me to remove all of my clothes. And then, and this is the part I still have trouble believing, they attached metal pins to my spine.
What's
there was no
that?
Actual piercing of skin. Only of dignity, as 4-inch metal pins were affixed with adhesives to my vertebrae at regular intervals from my neck down. I was positioned against a wall, floodlight illuminated my pin-spiked profile, and a camera captured it. The procedure did seem strange, but I soon learned that it was a long-established custom at most Ivy League and Seven Sisters school. All of them, whole generations of the cultural elite, were asked to pose.
Because why? Does it say why? What were they looking for?
I don't know, but they're showing full frontal here in some of these pictures. The unusual photo sessions were part of a larger project run by a scientist of psychology.
Oh.
Well, excuse me, but can't they sue
now?
No,
not if it's a doctor of psychology. Then you just have to submit and go, well, all right, it's a doctor of psychology.
How can the school use their processing forms and what you have to do to start school?
It does seem suspect, doesn't
it? Yes. Here's the psychologist, William Herbert Sheldon. He conducted them in cooperation with the universities. While the general idea was that the photos were meant for the use of studying scoliosis, rickets, and other posture-related deficiencies, it's believed they were actually being used to research something rather more sinister. Strong evidence in Sheldon's classified written material has shown that the researcher was using Ivy League freshman students to study the correlation between a person's body shape and their intelligence.
Oh.
The Nazis compiled similar archives analyzing photos of body types to support their theories on race and social hierarchy. No written permission of any kind was ever given by these students.
That would never happen today. Wendy's now showing me naked pictures of people. Thanks, Wendy. Appreciate that. Thanks.
With rickets?
No, this is a separate thing. These were in her wallet, Steve. I don't know where she got these pictures. These aren't even from part of the story.
I don't even know this guy. But how terrible. You had to do a side pose, a rear pose, and full frontal.
Yeah. And you don't even know this is. They just tell you to report to this one was it a gym, did you say, initially?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there were the rumors of break-ins at the university photo labs that housed piles and piles of photographs of young naked men and women. Many supposedly went on sale on the Ivy League black market.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's the notorious Ivy League black market.
Yep. Or ended up being flogged in the red light district, while others were given as gifts to newly recruited members of secret societies such as Skull and Bones.
That's the group that... Both that's George the secret Senior DL society, and yeah. Junior were supposed to be members.
What else would be on the Ivy League black market? Like Argyle sweaters with yes. Biff written on the tag.
Two for one.
Right?
Boat shoes. Right. Slightly used boat shoes.
Ascots.
Keys that say Daddy's car on them.
Daddy's car, Daddy's fortune.
At Yale, an enormous cache of nude photographs was discovered in a locked room by an unsuspecting university staff member many years later.
Wow.
Those ones were promptly burned. Come on, you didn't look through them before
somebody
you burned
looked
them.
Through them. Somebody did.
You're going to look in the drawer and see all these pictures, and you're going to go, oh, my God, these are all naked. Oh, my God, they're all naked.
We're trying to decide, should we burn this one? Give it a look. I don't know.
Right. The ugly ones were burned. The pretty ones they still have somewhere.
Another large collection was found gathering dust in dead storage in a Goodwill warehouse in Boston. Oh, the goodbye girl could get some. These photos made their way to the Smithsonian, which gave New York Times reporter Ron Rosenbaum access to in 1995, a decision they probably regretted later. I got to read this full article.
But you mentioned there's some prominent names. I mean, a former president, George Bush, George W. Bush, possible future president, Hillary Clinton, Diane Sawyer, Meryl Streep. Those are some pretty big names.
Well, they all went to... See, what are the advantages of going to a good school? They just get naked nudie shots of you.
Right.
That's so weird. What does George W. Bush and Hillary Rodham have in Clinton other than the possible presidency?
Yeah. You just said have in Clinton.
Yeah, you
did. Have in common. Ooh, I have to be careful.
Too late. Way too late.
I got to edit myself right now.
So if somebody had this picture of Hillary Clinton, it would be worth, well...
Come on.
You would imagine, but if somebody does have access to it, I would think that picture would be worth a lot of money right now. Wouldn't you?
Who would pay for it?
Larry Flint.
Larry Flint in a minute. Do you remember when we were kids?
Bill wouldn't. Bill Clinton wouldn't.
Oh.
I could see that at a time.
Right.
She did have bushy eyebrows.
Do you remember when we were kids and somebody had a bunch of pictures of Jacqueline Onassis sunbathing without her clothes on? And that was such a huge scandal.
I don't remember this.
You don't remember that at all?
I'm a girl.
Oh, I guess. Yeah.
Does Steve remember your
Steve,
about
do you
same
remember
age?
This?
I don't recall that one, no.
And I can't remember if... I want to say the photographer's name was Ron Jalella with a G, but I could be wrong.
You frighten me sometimes.
Well, but Ron Jalella is
not
like,
Ron.
Ron, right. But he's like the most famous of the paparazzi. He's the one, he was the one that put the word paparazzi in the book. Like before him, it was no big deal, but he made it an art form. But I think he's the one that snapped the pictures of Jacqueline Onassis sunbathing somewhere without any clothes on at all.
And in
that was
Greece.
Like it was in Greece.
On a beach. 72, is that about the right
year?
Yeah.
Is it Ron Jalella?
Ooh, I'm looking at him.
Yeah.
She's thin.
Yep. She was
and
thin.
Blurry in spots.
Yes.
They blurred it out.
Yeah. That's how she looked without her clothes on. She was blurry.
I don't know.
Isn't that weird?
Wow. See, that's terrible.
That's an invasion of privacy, right? But there was a huge bidding war for those photographs. I can't remember who ended up printing them finally, but that was a pretty big deal.
It's funny. I just printed it right now.
This was when she was married to
Aristotle Onassis.
Yeah. I don't know who the nude beach photos of Jackie O that caused it. She put the O in Jackie O caused a global media storm in 72 after her own husband Aristotle Onassis tipped off photographers during a 4-year smear campaign.
Wow.
He wooed Jackie O with attention and gifts. Which usually works, I got to admit.
It always works.
But after they wed in 1968, he kept up an affair with opera singer Maria Callas.
Yeah.
Throughout their marriage, he used press contacts to humiliate her, and in 72, he told photographers that she would be nude on a Greek beach. They took photos of her that were splashed across newspapers worldwide. It doesn't say who took it, though.
And to be fair, nude except for a pillbox hat.
But not on her head.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We're going to need a bigger box, was heard nearby.
You took it too far.
No, I didn't.
Really?
You did.
No, I didn't. Are you the pot or the kettle? Which one do you want to be?
No, I didn't. I was just reliving
Everybody
the moment.
Everybody thinks you're nicer than me. They are so
wrong. I was reliving the moment is all.
This is from the Daily Mail. You make me cry.
M-A-I-L, by the way. All right, we'll take a quick break. Then an HR meeting and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You're fired.
Bill, sooner or later, Donald Trump is going to fire
every one of us. Every one of us.
And I got an AP alert this morning that said Donald Trump fires campaign manager Corey Lewandowski. And on the line with us right now is ABC News correspondent Mark Remillard. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Very good.
All right. So this is a surprising move, in my opinion. I guess nothing should surprise me with Donald Trump. But when I got this AP alert that came over, I'm like, what?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is June, after all, so it's certainly very late in a campaign at the very beginning of the general election, or the focus on the general election, to be firing your campaign manager. But the campaign itself, some senior aides that ABC has talked with seem to suggest that this was a long time coming, that Corey Lewandowski, obviously, he's had his own controversy throughout this campaign season, going back to the controversy over potentially assaulting a reporter, that those charges were ended up dropping. But at times, Corey Lewandowski has certainly made headlines. And now as Trump shifts to the general election, the focus is on unifying the party with fundraising. A lot of the kind of ground game that a campaign needs that Lewandowski seems to have been reluctant to do and reluctant to expand the staff around Donald Trump. And that's why Trump appears to have brought in some more experienced political campaign runners and advisors in recent months, and it appears that they've shifted direction now.
Normally, Mark, in a situation like this, it would probably be the campaign manager who would explain to somebody that they've been fired, but when you're the campaign manager, who did fire him, do we know?
At this point, what we know is that he was fired during a meeting at Trump Tower here in New York today with Trump himself and some of the other campaign leadership. So, Donald Trump, we do know he's there. We have not heard from Donald Trump. I believe that he's going to be on Fox News tonight, but that's a pre-recorded interview, so we'll see whether or not that's discussed or not. But, yeah, we have not heard from Trump. Corey himself has been on CNN and really didn't say much. He basically just said that he expressed his thanks to the campaign, said that he's still in support of it, and, he doesn't know why he was fired is what he would say.
All right. Well, this is weird because you mentioned that these battery charges that showed up, was that in March that it happened? It was several months ago. And that's when I thought Trump's got to let him go. And no, he stood by his side and said, no, there's no issue here. I want to keep him on as my campaign manager. I know that that happened months ago, but it didn't appear that there was any bad blood between them. What happened?
Yeah. Back in March, Trump said it would be very easy for me to discard people, but I don't
right.
do that. I stay with people. And so, you would think, and a lot of people did think after that, after the controversy came up about whether or not he assaulted that reporter, that this would be the end for your campaign manager, because that was a huge, huge issue. But no, he stuck around. And so there's certainly a lot of speculation. The Trump campaign itself hasn't given a concrete reason for his departure. And obviously Lewandowski himself on CNN basically says he doesn't know. But as I said, with the Trump campaign shifting to the general election, they need more infrastructure. And that's why part of the reason that they have now Paul Manafort in there, who's a Washington insider and now a top advisor to Trump, who really has that ability to do that. And that could quiet some of the concerns in the Republican Party over Donald Trump, help unify it. And there's also the speculation as well that Lewandowski and Manafort did not get along very well. The two were not good working together, and so Lewandowski denies that there was a power struggle, but there's that speculation that may have been part of the case too.
Now, how about this, Mark? He's obviously the presumptive candidate. Things have been going well. There's that old adage, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. The timing just seems very peculiar to me. You too?
Yeah, well, it's certainly late. Like I said, it's June, so certainly it's late to be shifting up your entire your campaign manager. That's a huge change in the front office there for Donald Trump. But they have to begin looking forward to Hillary Clinton, and I think this is why they decided to look for people like Manafort, who was brought in to manage the delegates. But as it became clear that Donald Trump was going to get the numbers that he needed, then, you know, it wasn't, then Manafort was able to move into this more of an advisory role. And so, yes, it's very late, but at the same time, when you're facing a camp, when the campaign right now, in the week that it's had, it's been doing very poorly with fundraising. It's been having dropping poll numbers. Something has to change. And so that'll be the interesting thing going forward, too, is to see. So now with Manafort at the helm behind Trump, if nothing changes, then you start really raising some questions about, okay, what do you do? If you've already changed over your top guys and nothing changes, then what happens? So it'll be interesting to see what goes forward, absolutely.
Kind of makes sense to me now that I'm thinking about it, because you have Corey Lewandowski, who's a newcomer to the political stage. You have Donald Trump, who's a newcomer to politics and everything. You want to lose Lewandowski and get somebody who knows a little more, like this Paul Manafort, because push is coming to shove right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lewandowski, yeah, he's never worked a national race before, and he was very much of the let Trump be Trump camp, and that has obviously worked up to this point.
Yeah.
But now you look forward to the general, and you're facing Hillary Clinton, who is a very experienced politician and has a very, very, very powerful and organized, well-organized ground game in this general election coming up. So it's got to be, or at least it would seem to be, certainly part of some of their strategy to say, look, we need to really get a lot more organized here, that we're not facing, that while Trump may still be Trump because he is Donald Trump, and that's just who he is, you know, the game on the ground might need to be a little more organized. And that's something that they may be looking at Paul Manafort to be able to do versus Corey Lewandowski, who's at times appeared to be reluctant to do that.
How much of a role would you say, Mark, does the campaign manager have in the selection of the vice president?
Well, Corey Lewandowski, they do have a very significant role in that. And that there were, that he did play a role in that. But certainly if you go back to, Lewandowski said on CNN that Manafort's now really been at the helm since April. So you're talking more than 2 months now. So you would have to assume that Manafort has certainly a key role in that. And obviously we don't know who that running mate is yet, but certainly you have to imagine that the campaign manager and these top advisors play a very key role in vetting people and making sure that this is the person with whom they want to brand their candidate.
Mark Remillard on the line with us. Anything surprising you at all during this presidential campaign? Because honest to God, it's like every time you turn around, there's a new surprise.
I know. It's almost like just expect to be surprised and you won't be surprised anymore, right? But yeah, exactly. I mean, here it is. As I said, it's so late and we're going into the general election. And the guy that's been the right-hand man for Donald Trump and a guy who's also as fiery and as off the cuff as Donald Trump is Corey Lewandowski. And it's been a big part of his success. And then here it is June, and now they're switching to a much more seemingly conventional style where they're getting someone who's a Washington insider who's got the ability to kind of run that regular style campaign. It'll be interesting to see if it works for him.
Mark, I saw over at ABCNews.com they hinted the fact that maybe Trump's oldest children and possibly son-in-law had something to do with this, that they weren't thrilled with Lewandowski's work and liked Manafort quite a bit. Is that a possibility that they had some say in this?
Yeah, there was definitely some rumors going around that his family and some of his kids may not have had been maybe twisting his arm a little bit, saying, okay, it's time to get rid of Lewandowski.
Yeah.
Lewandowski was asked about that on CNN and kind of had the same response to the questions of controversy surrounding Paul Manafort between him and Paul, basically saying, I have a great relationship with them. I don't think that's the case. And, I don't think there's anything to do with that. And Lewandowski just remains very ardently in Trump's camp. And Lewandowski will play a role at the convention. He's the head of the delegates for New Hampshire. And so if there's any indication going forward, Lewandowski appears that he's going to be there rallying the New Hampshire delegate camp to vote for Trump. So at least right now, it doesn't seem like there's any bad blood between them, despite the fact that he was just let go.
Donald Trump has proved he can say anything he wants, and the response of people adoring him keeps rising and rising. But this is going downwards a little bit, and now this shows a little loyalty thing, in my opinion. It's like you want some loyalty to your people. This isn't very loyal.
You said this isn't very loyal?
It is not very loyal, him letting go Corey.
Right. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, on the other side of that coin, no, he let him go here in June. But at the same time, I mean, we were talking about that assault. I mean, he stood by him. When you might expect some other candidates to say this is a firestorm, that my campaign manager is being accused of assaulting a reporter, let's try and get rid of this. So, you know, you could look at it the other way, too, and say if you're going to argue that there's a lack of loyalty, certainly it seems like he stuck by him for quite a while following some very controversial moves and controversial headlines surrounding his campaign manager. So at this point, it appears that it's more about a shift in the way that they need to run their campaign, especially as they look to face Hillary Clinton.
Who in the world wants to be president of the United States, Mark?
That is a good question. I don't know. I don't know. It's the hardest job, and you got to – I mean, how much do you have to deal with on a daily basis? I don't know, but – guys like Donald Trump, who've been CEOs of companies, they deal with this executive kind of role in the private world, and you know, you have to imagine that's part of why he feels that he would be good for this position. And so we'll see, obviously, where that turns out in November. But I don't know, I could never do it.
Mark, thank you so much for the report. We really appreciate it. It's Mark Remillard from ABC News. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, a quick break, and then more show. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, WGN. New evidence uncovered was John Wayne Gacy connected to a nationwide sex trafficking ring. Larry Potash reports Tuesday on WGN-TV News at 9.
All right, what did you want to talk about here?
I'm so happy to announce that the show business feud to if you look at the hierarchy of show business feuds, Martin and Lewis is way, way up there.
Did Laurel and Hardy get along?
Sometimes they did, but not always. But the one that people have been talking about and have been sick about for years, for 10 years now, is the big feud between Tori Spelling and Tiffany Thiessen. And I'm happy to report, Wendy, that as of this weekend, that feud has been patched up.
Did she drop the Amber?
Yeah, it's not Tiffany Amber Thiessen anymore. People weren't taking her seriously because of that. So now get more legitimate acting jobs. It says here, after nearly 10 years of silence, Beverly Hills 90210 co-stars Tori Spelling and Tiffany Thiessen recently reconnected at their kids' Los Angeles school. This according to Us Weekly. Spelling has, these are her children, Liam, who's 9, Stella, who's 8. You can tell this story is from Us Weekly because the ages of her children and Tiffany Thiessen's children have no bearing on the story whatsoever, zero. Because it's Us Weekly, they always tell you how old people are. Tori Spelling's kids are Liam, 9, Stella, 8, Hattie, 4, and Finn, 3. These are with Dean McDermott. And now it also says Harper, 6, and Holt, 11 months. I think those are Tiffany Thiessen's children. Were they also fighting? I don't know if their kids were fighting as well. I hope not.
I think that's what brought them together.
The rift began back in 2006. Boy, we were coming up on the 10-year anniversary of this feud. The rift began in 2006 when Spelling, 43, cheated on then-husband Charlie Sheenian with McDermott, 49. The True Tory star broke the news of the split to Sheenian through her therapist. Thiessen, 42, was close to Sheenian and took it personally.
Can I tell you, these are two people I couldn't care less about.
In the world, right?
I didn't even know they had a feud.
Oh, you're the new.
I don't care that they're
back
together. I saw a couple episodes of the Tori Spelling show and was heartbroken over it because she was really having some emotional problems with her husband. It was really terrible to watch.
Right.
And I watched Beverly Hills 90210, but there are not two people I could not care less about.
Then Tiffany Thiessen, formerly Amber Thiessen, and now Tori Amber Spelling. Tori Amber Spelling stole the Amber from Tiffany Amber Thiessen. She just stole the Amber from right out from under her. This is my favorite thing about Tori Spelling of all time, is that she maintains to this day that when she went in an audition for Beverly Hills 90210, now her father, Aaron Spelling, was the one who was behind all of it. It was his show.
He did a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh, everything. He's one of the most successful producers in TV history. But she maintains that nobody there on the set knew that it was his daughter, even though she didn't change her last name. It was Spelling, and she looks exactly like her father, Aaron Spelling. Like, there's never been a daughter anywhere who looks more like her dad than she does.
She told people on the cast that there was no relation.
She didn't go out of her way. Like, she didn't go out. She didn't just walk up to people and go, "Hi, I'm Tori Spelling. No relation." She didn't do that.
That would have been great.
She says she got that because people have always said, "Well, you got that job because your dad was the producer." And she goes, "Oh no, I went in and I auditioned and I didn't tell anybody."
Oh my God! Why didn't she just say yes? And who cares?
I know.
Wouldn't you put your kid if you were making a series? Wouldn't you put your kid in it?
Yeah.
Just one of them?
Yeah, just one, probably. Just to show that I can be fair. If I did two, then everyone's like, well, yeah, he put all of his kids in his show. But if you put one in, then people go, well, he only put one in. He's kind of fair.
I have spent my whole life being bummed about the fact that my parents couldn't help me get into radio.
Right.
I mean, if you have the chance to help your kids, do it.
Then you would do it, right. But my daughters, Kylie Amberleff and my other daughter, Reese Amberleff, one of them would get... I don't know which one, but I'd give one of them a job. All right, we need to take a quick break. The feud is over, folks.
Thank God.
Business as usual.
Is this where you come up with Demi Lovato news, too?
I have some Demi Lovato news.
We don't need
it. I have some. It's WGN.
What is this cool music?
This is from the new Star Trek films. Steve reported in the news, and boy... crazy story. One of the actors from the new series of Star Trek movies, Anton Yelchin is his name. He died yesterday. Very, very peculiar circumstances. A car accident, his own car. He was pinned between a mailbox and his own car. Died way too young, just 27 years old. So more and more details have been released since yesterday, including, as Steve pointed out, the fact that there may have been. Is it may have been at this point, Steve?
His car was under a recall.
Oh, it was for sure?
Yeah. All right. That's what they're saying. And, you know, I'm the worst. I don't know about you guys. I really pay very little attention to recalls.
Unless it sounds like something catastrophic.
Even then, sometimes you put it off. I remember the whole Toyota recall with nails were being shot out of the airbags.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Toyota. It was various manufacturers or one manufacturer that serviced all these vehicles.
Right.
We got a recall for the Toyota Corolla, and we put it off like idiots because,
right.
And they say, do not let a passenger ride in the passenger seat because that's where it could go. Well, I wasn't going to have Jim sit in the back seat.
Right.
Or me sit in the back seat while he's driving.
You always think, well, it's just an extreme caution thing.
But I did notice you, Wendy, bought a lot more insurance on Jim last year. I noticed that. That's weird.
And I let him sit in the front. But we did get it fixed and everything's good. But... you know, you get these recall notices and you mean to get around to it, but you need to get it done. It just seems weird to me because they found his car in neutral.
Yeah.
Well, that's what, and again, it may not be related at all, but that's what the recall was about, that the gear shift was a little confusing, so that people might have thought it was in a different gear than it actually was.
Really?
Yeah.
So help me, because I was doing this yesterday, too, and I can't figure out the timeline. He starts the car up, but then gets out of the car. Was he putting mail in the mailbox?
I don't know. It says, you know, it happened early Sunday. The car, the Grand Cherokee, was in neutral, rolled down the driveway, crushing him against the brick mailbox.
Oh, man.
Because my thought was, usually these gates are remote control or electric or something.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't working, and he went to physically open the gate, car continued to roll and...
Wendy, it could well be that the mailbox was just there.
Right.
That he was doing something else, something not related to the mailbox at all, but that's what, you know, was between him and the Grand Cherokee. That's where it stopped.
Oh, man.
This is so freakish.
He's 27 years old. He's played Chekhov in two of the Star Trek movies. There's a third one coming out, I want to say next month. I think either June or July. I know him from a movie called Like Crazy, a love story that's... such an incredibly sad love story from a couple of years ago. He and a British actress named Felicity Jones are in this really bittersweet, just as touching could be love story. If you haven't seen it, it's not for everybody because parts of it are very hard to watch. but interesting movie.
You know what I thought was weird is as I, you know, it was so tragic. You wanted to look into it and find out how does a 27-year-old get killed by his own car.
Yeah.
And you know who his parents were?
Mm-mm.
They were really popular figure skaters in the Soviet Union before they moved to the United States. They were stars of the Leningrad Ice Ballet for 15 years. Why do I know this name, Irina Karina?
I'm not sure.
And Victor Yelchin. I seem to remember.
Were they Olympians too?
And the Karenina is a Karenina is a novel.
Right.
I don't know. I just
Beware the Train. Spoiler alert. I know he was born in Russia and came over as a very small baby, like a couple months old, I want to say. He really is like anybody who follows the more obscure films. He was like one of those up and coming actors that everybody always goes, as soon as this guy catches the right break or two, everybody's going to know who he is. They were saying that. Everybody's going to know who he was. I'm trying to think of who I could compare him to. It's interesting because he had a very kind of an Eastern European look about him. He's from Russia. But in all of his roles, he didn't always play that. I liked him. That's just sad.
I was just starting to get to know him, you know. It's like he hadn't achieved greatness, and all the celebrities that came out to offer the condolences were just raving about the talents of this kid, and I didn't even know him. I didn't see him play Chekhov. Did he do a good Chekhov?
Yeah, he actually did. You know who he reminds me of a little bit, and I don't know why, but you know who Peter Sarsgaard is, the actor?
Yeah.
He's got that kind of a demeanor to him, very kind of gentle. And like Sarsgaard, he came up doing independent films mostly, but every once in a while, a bigger part in a more mainstream movie.
Well, if that's the case where this Jeep Grand Cherokee, it looked like it was in one gear when it wasn't.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Wow. So the recall must have happened. Well, I guess we don't know, but
the Jeep Grand Cherokees, I can't talk, were manufactured between July 16th, 2012 and December 22nd, 2015. So fairly recent cars were recalled by the company in April.
Yeah.
After the Highway Traffic Safety Administration investigated a possible transmission defect.
Interesting. Boy, that's terrible. That's so sad.
The 27-year-old's vehicle rolled backwards down the steep driveway. And then you're just thinking, I guess you don't really expect your car to be moving if you thought you put it in park. But if there's an incline, it's going to pick up speed. But you just think you'd go, whoa, my car's moving. I got to get out of the way. But obviously he had his back turned or something.
Yeah, and maybe it was just so quiet he didn't hear it coming or anything. I guess it's just guesswork. They went out of their way as soon as they reported this story yesterday to say there seems to be no foul play involved.
Which I thought for sure it sounded like foul play was involved. It just seemed weird, and he didn't show up for some job, and so friends came to check on him and found him.
Yeah. And I know he's got a couple of completed films that'll be out in the next few months, too. It's one of those cases. This happens over and over and over again with actors or actresses. They've always got a couple of them kind of in the bank that haven't come out yet. And then it's so hard to watch those movies and enjoy their work because you're thinking, wow, this is the last time we'll ever see this guy or this girl. It's so hard.
It is hard. Hey, is this Jose?
Yes. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just, when I saw the story, almost the same thing happened to me. I mean, I didn't get killed or anything like that. But the gear shift, I don't know if when I was younger, remember you used to have those notches where you put it in reverse, drive, neutral, this and that.
Yeah.
The problem with these Cherokees, they still have the gear shifter there, but you just tap it up or tap it down. Sometimes you don't even know what gear you're in. I actually stepped out of my car. I have a slight incline, and my driveway, I stepped out, had the car in neutral, thought it was in park, and it only rolled like 3 feet because the door was still open, and I kind of caught it. But, I mean, that's what I think would happen.
Wow.
It is the most confusing thing in the world. I even brought it in for the recall, and the only thing the recall does is it, like, dings now or, you know, gives you, like, a special message, hey, you're not in park.
Now, I had a very old Jeep Grand Cherokee that we just traded in. It was a 2004, I think. And you could see, you know, P for park. And you could see what position you were in. How had it changed in these newer vehicles?
Well, if you remember before, the actual gear shift itself would shift all the way down. So you went from park, right? The gear shift itself would move all the way down 3 or 4 notches and be in a different position. With the new vehicle, you push a button and you click it down, but the gear shift stays standing straight up. It doesn't, you know, go down like it used to, where you can see a visible difference. You have to look at your dashboard to figure out whether you're reverse, neutral. And in fact, when I went in to take my car to get washed this weekend, one of the dealer guys says, "Hey, we just fixed our, you know, shifter. Now they change it where I think it does move a little bit." But you can't tell. It's literally you push up. So when you go to park and you're in drive, you know, push on the brake, obviously. You just push the gear shifter up. It clicks. And the tree or whatever still stands straight up. And you have to see if it's in park. I did almost the same exact thing this guy must have done. I had it in neutral. I was going to get something at the end of my driveway. My car starts rolling backwards.
Oh, my God.
Terrible.
And we test drove a car. I think it was the Honda Pilot. And there is no stick shift to change gears or no thing to grab onto. It's just like a little dial that you turn.
Like a knob that you just move to where you want it to be?
A knob. And the Mercedes has the same thing. It's like a knob. It's really weird. They've completely changed the gear shifter. And it's disturbing that's... when you first get it.
Yeah.
When I first bought the car, I tried to put it in reverse. It took me 4 tries to get it in reverse because I would click too far up or click too far down.
Very interesting. But you did get your recall taken care of?
I got my recall taken care of. Now a little bell chimes and a red light turns on the dashboard.
Well, that's helpful. It is.
It's not fixed, but it's better.
But if that's the style of the car.
Yeah, I guess so.
Interesting. Thank you, Jose.
Thanks, Jose.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Take care.
See, if we learn anything from this, don't put off your
recalls.
Follow
the recalls.
Yeah.
Do something about it.
They're there for a reason.
Quick break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. We were talking about Anton Yelchin, the Star Trek actor who died at the age of 27 in a very mysterious way. Now it's been shown that the Jeep Grand Cherokee he was in was under recall. I don't know if it's proven that he didn't get the recall, but it's like you couldn't tell sometimes if it was in neutral or park, and it appears that's what happened, and the car rolled down an incline and basically caught him between that and a mailbox / brick wall.
So now whose fault is this? Is it the car company's fault for creating this defect or not fixing the defect, or is it his fault for not following the recall?
How can they fix it if you don't bring the car in?
Right. Wow.
Hey,
that's
Les,
terrible.
Same thing happened to you?
Yeah. Hi, guys. We rented a Chrysler van in Las Vegas and just about ready to turn it in, stop for gas. Put it in park, got out, and you know, you leave the door open. Went to get the filler into the unit, and it started just rolling back toward me.
Oh, no.
Crushed the heck out of the door and the fender. Luckily, I was able to get in and get the brake before it did any more damage. So there's definitely a problem.
And then, again, because it's a recall, I don't know if the recall was in order when this happened to you, Les, but are you responsible for those damages? What happens there?
Well, yeah, if you sign a contract, you're responsible. Thank goodness when you rent a car and you rent it with the proper credit card, they'll take care of it.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I hope so. Wow, you're lucky it wasn't a lot worse.
Very lucky.
Oh, man.
I consider myself very fortunate.
You should. Thank you, Les.
Hey, guys, love your show. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Glad you're okay to keep listening to our show. And new cars change. We have a new Toyota Highlander. I love it. It's that keyless start, which takes some getting used to.
Yep.
Although I just showed you a little secret compartment.
I didn't know such a thing existed. I was telling you off air that since I had, this is the first car I've ever had that you don't start up the ignition with a key. You just press a button and it starts up. And ever since then, if I'm in another car, like I've rented cars, I'll drive my wife or my daughter's car, it throws me for a second. You don't just press a button. You got to put the key in like the old-fashioned way. And you said, well, you can also use that key that's hidden in your keychain. And I didn't know such a thing existed, but it turns out it's true. In my
remote,
there's a slide button that if I do it properly, there's
you
a key
still
inside.
Can't do it.
No, I can do it. There it is. I had no idea.
Well, the dealer's supposed to tell you about that, and I don't know exactly what it does other than you can use it to lock your glove box if you have, you know.
Right. If I have really nice gloves.
If I'm a valet.
A lot of times I go to the opera after the show.
If I'm a valet, Parker, and the glove box is locked, I'm going to break into it because I know something important's in
right,
there.
Right, that's true.
You know?
There's a way in.
But I think if, like, your remote doesn't work, like if you run out of battery,
your battery
juice,
goes, yeah, and then you're stuck if the battery.
You can open the car with that little hidden key.
Oh, why wouldn't they tell me this when I purchased the vehicle?
Because they wanted you to find it.
The last car I had before the Jeep that I'm driving now was an Audi, and they told me as I was driving off the lot, oh, by the way, premium gas only, as I'm driving away. Like, I had no idea, but as I'm pulling away, one more thing real quick, premium gas only.
And I've heard that that doesn't make any difference.
I've heard the same. But you're, you know, once you spend money on a car, you're like, I don't want to screw up the engine right. by not getting the gas they tell me to get.
All right, I think we have time for one more call. Look for your hidden key in your remote, people. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, I have this car also.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee?
Yes, and it's a 2015, and I have the recall in my hand here. But as I read the recall, it doesn't really compel you to do anything. It says they will follow up again with a notice once a permanent solution is available. And it says what you must do to ensure your safety. Once you receive your follow-up notice in the mail, contact your Jeep Chrysler dealer to schedule a service appointment. So when I got this, I didn't feel that it was asking me to do anything until I get the follow-up notice.
I want to get this fixed quickly, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but absolutely, because I know exactly what they're talking about. It's real hard to tell if the car is in gear. It also slips into a kind of a seller manual drive by just bumping it when I turn the wheel. It's a great car other than that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a bad design.
Yeah, very concerning.
Well, I would definitely call your dealership and ask, because I know with the airbag thing, we called and they said, we don't have the parts in yet, just don't have anybody in the front seat.
Yeah.
That's what it says right here. It says FCA intends to repair your vehicle free of charge. However, a permanent remedy is currently under development. They're working to finalize remedy by the fourth quarter of 2016.
That's too far.
We will contact you again by mail with a follow-up recall notice when the remedy is available.
Now, Lynn, a caller called a little earlier, and I don't know if it's the same model or anything, but he said now it beeps or there's a bell when it's in park.
I don't see any reference to that in...
Well, call your dealer because this is scary.
Yeah, don't leave it waiting. That's
terrible. And if you get a recall and it says what it told Lynn, like there's nothing we can do, we're looking for a solution, what are you supposed to do? Call your dealer and demand some service.
Thanks.
Thank you for sharing that, Lynn.
Good luck,
that's really helpful.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Be careful. 10-2 position.
10-2 position.
But now they're saying 9-6 because with airbags, you don't want 10-2. You want your hands 9-3.
Right.
I don't know. We're getting old.
Yeah.
These new contraptions.
We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.